mob demand description of men who allegedly gang rape women by church, and it's getting angry in Epsom. Traitors, traitors, and after the incident in Merseyside, why the silence from the police? You'll hear from a leading motor manufacturer, interest in electric cars has soared, and I think we all know why. An attempted firebombing, allegedly on a synagogue in Finchley, and...
We finally got the NHS going in the right direction. Lowest waiting list in 3 years, fastest ambulance response times in half a decade. Under Labour, the NHS is improving.
Is that the NHS you recognise? Because you'll have your chance to put your calls to him, Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, exclusively on Call the Cabinet later in the show. But now, 7 o'clock news on LBC is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock. The Prime Minister has told LBC social media companies need to step up and take responsibility to protect children online. The fresh warning comes as executives from the likes of TikTok and Snapchat have been summoned for talks at Downing Street today. It comes midway through the government's consultation on an Australian-style social media ban for under-16s. Speaking last month, Sir Keir Starmer said tougher regulation is a matter of when, not if.
We need to go further. The status quo isn't good enough. We need to do more to protect children. That's why we're consulting about issues such as banning social media for under-16s. I'm very keen that we do more on addictive features within social media.
The Prime Minister has written exclusively for LBC on the issue. You can read more on the LBC app. It's understood the UK could see shortages of chicken and pork if the war in Iran continues into the summer. Government officials have reportedly been drawing up contingency plans for a reasonable worst-case scenario. Sources have stressed, though, it's part of normal planning, not a prediction. Sir Keir Starmer and President Macron will lead talks in Paris tomorrow to discuss reopening the Strait of Hormuz. Two people have been arrested after an attempted arson attack on a synagogue in North London. Finchley Reform Synagogue was targeted with a suspected petrol bomb on Tuesday. Police are treating it as an anti-Semitic hate crime. New data has revealed an average of 3 prisoners a week were freed by mistake over the past year. Official figures show 179 inmates were released in error in England and Wales between last April and March this year. An independent report has called the figures a symptom of a broken system. The government says it will accept the recommendations in full. And 1 in 10 online pharmacies say they've had their websites cloned by platforms selling fake weight loss jabs. The National Pharmacy Association has urged patients to be wary of prices that seem too good to be true. It's also written to the Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, calling for stronger safeguards for patients. Olivia Pickard is from the organisation and says people need to be cautious.
In the past, we used to say, well, if the pharmacy has the logo for the regulator with their premises registration number, you can probably assume that this is a real website. But unfortunately, even fake websites are now cloning these logos.
And the Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, will join Nick Ferrari at Breakfast Live to take your calls on LBC's Call the Cabinet later this morning. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 10,559. It closed down 49 yesterday. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.14. LBC weather, a mix of sunshine and showers for large parts of the UK. Some heavy downpours in northern areas, a high of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Hello, beautiful people! Get ready to rock with a new Volkswagen T-Roc. With £2,000 towards your finance deposit on the new Volkswagen T-Roc with Solutions PCP 7.9% APR representative. Test drive the T-Roc today and see why it won What Car's Best Small SUV award.
Order by the 4th of May 2026. Indemnities may be required. Volkswagen Financial Services.
Is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 4 minutes after 7, Thursday, April the 16th, a prison farce, a total of 179 prisoners freed in error in England and Wales, a review has revealed. We ask, how that has occurred and what needs to be done to put it right. If we're talking about putting things right, one of the big challenges is the NHS. And here's Health Secretary Wes Streeting talking about one aspect, the waiting lists.
I watch the numbers week by week. The Prime Minister is watching me, watching the numbers, and calls me in regularly to account.
Well, he joins us, that's Wes Streeting, unfortunately, not the Prime Minister. Always good to have Mr. Streeting, though. He joins us later in the show to take your calls on all aspects of the health service. And one of those, of course, is how the NHS is going to deal with 1 year on, 1 year, 12 months from an historic court victory on single-sex spaces. Still, we have had no official guidance from the government. Many believe this tracks back to this show, this interview, March 2022, when Sir Keir Starmer was still Leader of the Opposition. And I asked, a woman can have a penis.
Nick, I'm not.
A woman can have a penis.
I don't think that discussing this issue in this way helps anyone in the long run.
Well, there we go. 4 years on, still not got any definitive answer. In other news, after the problems in Epping, after the National Police Chiefs Council ruling, after the incident at Merseyside, why now in Epsom in Surrey are police refusing, it would appear, to do a description of men who are believed to have gang-raped a woman by a church? You know what the fears are among locals. Why will the police refuse to address it? The vote, of course, for that social media ban will give you the latest on that. Rejected. What does it mean for campaigners? And then in other news,
as petrol and diesel skyrocket with the war in Iran, could this be the moment people put down the pumps and pick up the plug for an electric car? I'm LBC's George Ike at Vauxhall HQ in Coventry.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
But before any of that, news breaking at this time, you're listening to LBC, 6 minutes after seven, and the figures are in from the ONS for the economy growth. And I'm delighted to tell you, I'm always happy to give you good news, the UK economy growing by 0.5% in February. So that's up 0.5% in February. ONS, Office for National Statistics, official figures. More on that in our regular look at the world of finance a little under half an hour away. But to that story I mentioned at the top there, cases of prisoners being freed from jail by mistake have been laid bare in this new report, and count them, 179 freed in error in England and Wales. Roughly a 12-month period ending March 2026, or March this year. Roughly one, really every 3 weeks, if you look at it. Total of 91 prisoners released between the start of April 25 and the end of October 2025. It really is rather concerning. In one instance, one of them was on the run for 579 days, an official inquiry revealed. A lot of this, of course, is focused on the mistaken release of the sex offender Hadesh Kabatu, originally from Ethiopia, of course. Convicted of that sexual assault in Epping in Essex, he was released from His Majesty's jail, Chelmsford, last October. Well, last December, I spoke with Deputy Prime Minister, Justice Secretary David Lammy, about this. He told me, this was in December, there were two prisoners on the run, but declined to go into more detail.
I can't tell you the circumstances.
Why are we going to find them? I want to help you find them. I want to be able to put out their descriptions now, live on LBC. You know how LBC works. I don't need to remind you of the heft of this great organisation, Mr. Lammy.
Just so I can give you the facts. We've got a paper-based system, as you know.
Yes.
We need to move to a digital system. I've asked Dame Lynn Owens to look at this and make some recommendations. I've put in a new digital crack team to help our prisons. There's been a bit of a misjoin between our courts and our prisons. I've put in a new query unit. The numbers are too high. There has been a spike. I'm pleased that there looks like there's a downward trend this year.
But how long have these two been on the lam, Mr.
That
Lammy? How long have these two been on the lammy?
It's not an issue.
Well, it is. I mean, are they from Wandsworth?
There are two in the
system. Oh, please God, you know which jail they're from.
But Nick, because actually this is a policing issue, and we do ask our police to then do the work to find these individuals.
David Lammy speaking with me last year. He did say digital crack team, didn't he? So what do we take from these figures? Let's turn first to David Shipley, who's a former prisoner inmate at Wandsworth, investigative journalist focusing on these areas. You'll catch his working titles such as the Daily Mail, Telegraph and Spectator. So this all, David, comes down to this paper-based system. Is that a justifiable or a lame excuse, a lammy-lame excuse? Good morning.
Good morning. I think it's the excuse which the civil servants are pushing on the ministers. I know the ministers and the justice team are really, really concerned about releases and error. I want to solve it. And I think the senior officials are pushing on them this idea that somehow if they switch to a digital system, this will solve the problems. But actually, if you look at what has gone wrong in the detail of each of these releases and error that we see that we get the information on, it's human error. And replacing one computer system with another or switching from paper to computer systems won't stop people getting those wrong.
They just input the wrong material. Instead of writing it on a piece of paper, they'll input it into a computer, effectively.
Well, exactly. And I think one of the problems they've identified is there's lots of instances where people have multiple entries with different aliases on the NOMIS system, which is the computer system that tracks prisoners. And they want to convert to a system which that won't happen. But that would mean going through every record and somehow competently combining records where necessary. You know, how the justice system is going to do that, I'm not really clear.
What would you recommend? Because I hear what you say. Obviously, human error, that's the one problem. Computers are amazing. They've revolutionised every workplace they've touched. But you still have a human to input some data.
Yeah, I think part of this, is lack of staffing. Because a lot of these releases and error happen at the jails, which are very busy. You know, a jail like Chelmsford receives and releases a lot of people every day. So receptions in those jails, like with Wandsworth, are always quite chaotic and rushed. So, you know, having more staff would help. I think, though, fundamentally, this is about better training and better leadership. You know, this is a situation where the governors of these jails should be insisting that, you know, everyone, before they're released, they file a check properly. There needs to be accountability for the managers who are on duty in prison receptions, who are signing off on the final step of releases. And there needs to be a culture where people do their job properly. If you look at the detail about what happened with Hadish Kabatu, it's quite revealing. Apparently, all this paperwork was prepared for him about him being transferred to an immigration removal centre. But also we prepared a release paperwork just in case it turned out we weren't able to deport him, which is sort of the state were already preparing for its failure in that way. And then the people in reception had all this paperwork in front of them and just let him go. And then it took hours and multiple calls from the company that was going to transport him to the immigration removal centre before I think the alarm actually got raised. It's a lack of leadership and a lack of good of people doing their jobs properly.
Lastly, David, you've been inside jail, you've done a lot of work on the prisoner state, as it's called. What would you say about both the calibre and the morale of our prison staff?
I think, like with any workplace, you'll get some really good people, you know, some average people and some not so good people. I think one of the big problems is because there were so many cuts to the prison service over the last decade or so, a lot of the good, experienced people, sort of frontline officers, were pushed out, encouraged to retire. And you've got a very, very inexperienced sort of junior frontline officer group these days. And a lot of prison leaders who just don't do the job. You know, they hide away in their offices rather than getting out on the prison wings and making sure consistent standards are enforced and upholding values. And I think that's the real problem. That's why morale is bad, because officers are not being led well and not being cared for.
David, thanks as ever for your input on this. David Shipley, check out his work. He's a journalist, investigative journalist who focuses on crime and justice. You'll see him in titles such as The Daily Mail, Telegraph and The Spectator, 13 after 7. Listen to that, Mark Fairhurst, National Chair of the Prison Officers Association. If you would, Mark, talk us through the process of an inmate being released. What is the paperwork that has to be filed or prepared? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, so when someone's getting released, we have to calculate their sentence first and foremost. And with all the changes lately with the early release schemes, that is a very complex situation in most cases. And it goes to an offender management unit where one of the lowest paid staff, who probably hasn't been trained adequately, is responsible for calculating that person's sentence using a pen, a paper and a calculator. That gets signed off above them by a manager, which is then signed off 14 days before release by a duty governor. That paperwork goes to reception. We have a manager in reception, a uniformed manager, who then does the final checks, checks the ID of the prisoner, checks that they're due for release on the paperwork, make sure that there are not any further outstanding warrants. And then we quite simply do what we have to do by law and release that prisoner. Now, this is a combination of decades of underinvestment and a lack of resource, and definitely a lack of training for our frontline staff from successive governments. So I'm pleased that the Owens review has forced the government And they're doing the right thing by investing over 80 million to digitalise and eradicate human error as much as we practically can.
But what of the point made by Mr. Shipley that you still need a human to input the data that the computer could then get wrong, Mark?
We do, and you're never going to totally eradicate human error.
No,
but what will help is the final check at the gate before we release that person. If we use biometrics, which are yet to be installed, and that biometric system flags up, hang on a minute, this person shouldn't be getting released at this time, that would help. That would be the final check. But as you say, you need a human to input this information into the computer, and artificial intelligence can only go so far. But these are welcome reforms, but they're much needed reforms.
Lastly, the total came from that review yesterday of 179 in that time period. Did that number surprise you, disappoint you? Did you think it would be about there, Mark?
It didn't surprise me. It did disappoint me because our prime purpose is to protect the public by making sure we keep in custody those committed by the courts and make sure that they don't get released before their time. But the sad thing is, with all the urgent checks that David Lammy introduced, we're still releasing, on average, 3 or 4 a month, because we've had 50 releases in error since those checks were introduced. And that's down to the antiquated systems, which are yet to be modernised. And what you've got to remember as well, I am very cynical when it comes to procurement within HMPPS. We've now got to tender for this artificial intelligence, for this biometric system. And let's hope that we don't get some cowboy firm who will rip off the taxpayer and not give us a system that's fit for purpose.
Mark Fairhurst, thank you for your time as ever, Mark. National Chair of the Prison Officers Association. It is a farce, but will it be put better? How come there isn't that final check? And what of human error, even inputting computer data? Plus, in other news, Sir Keir Starmer told MPs yesterday as regards the Iran conflict,
a lot of pressure has been applied to me to take a different course, and that pressure included what happened last night. I'm not going to change my mind.
Is he on the right tack there? Conservative grandee Sir Jeremy Hunt will join me after the news. It's 7:16 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Ahead of a Downing Street summit later, the Prime Minister has told LBC there will be stark consequences for social media companies that don't step up to protect children online. Two people have been arrested after an attempted arson attack on a synagogue in North London. And data just released shows the UK economy grew by 0.5% in February. LBC weather, a mix of sunshine and showers for large parts of the UK. Some heavy downpours in northern areas, a high of 16 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. There are delays in Dollis Hill because Dudden Hill Lane is closed both ways after an accident. It's very busy in the area. Also, queues on the North Circular Road eastbound to the Fall Street Tunnel in Edmonton because a car broke down earlier. That's now been recovered, so all the lanes are open, but it's still very slow. In Park Royal, there are delays. Acton Lane remains closed both ways because of an ongoing police investigation. The A40 remains closed both ways from the Northern Roundabout and the Marylebone Flyover, and as a result, there's a lengthy delay on the M4 eastbound on to the elevated section. On the trains, Great Western Railway services are running between West Ealing and Greenford, and there are delays on Gatwick Express, Southern and Thames Link services south of Gatwick Airport.
Call the Cabinet on LBC. Put your questions to the Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, this morning on Nick Ferrari at Breakfast.
Do you belong here? Next to me, about to jump into the sea on an army co-steering expedition. What's your gut saying? Walk away from the edge? Or jump in and join a team that will be by your side for life? Still listening? You belong here. Army, recruiting now. Search Army Jobs.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
Cancer doesn't care about childhood. It doesn't care what they miss out on or how much you want to protect them. But we do. At Great Ormond Street Hospital Charity, we fund life-saving research, vital family support, and the special things that help seriously ill kids be kids. Until no childhood is lost to cancer. Join us. Search GOSH Charity.
Oh! You want weight loss advice?
Weight loss? Actually, what you want to do...
I got my weight loss secret from my mother, who got it from her mother's
weight loss.
Weight loss?
I forget that. You just
keep dancing.
Dragon fruit.
Podcast.
Advice.
Or you could go to MedExpress. MedExpress. Healthcare without the noise. Go to medexpress.co.uk/weightloss.
Ali 60 milligram hard capsules contain orlistat for overweight adults with a BMI of 28 plus. Follow a reduced calorie, lower fat diet. Always read the label.
At Lidl, we're giving you 50% off a fruit or veg item on your next shop. Just scan the Lidl Plus app at checkout. And when you scan, you'll be in with a chance to win your whole shop back. Open Lidl Plus and start saving today. Lidl, more to value. 18 plus GB residents, various prices available, subject to availability. End 30th of 5th, 26. Full T's and C's apply. See lidl.co.uk/lp-terms.
Get your own UK-based account manager, a beekeeper, for support with PensionBee. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
20 minutes after 7, come to your reaction on that jailhouse croc, as I'm calling it. 179 prisoners who've been released in there. I'll quickly take you through some of the front pages you're waking up to, or for some of you, of course, you're coming home to. A very powerful one on the Daily Mail, Labour's shameful betrayal of women. It's a year from that historic court victory, you remember, of regards brought by Women for Scotland. Public bodies still ignoring it. I remind you, excuse me, we have the Health Secretary, West, treating its massive implications to the NHS. So a question we will put to him on that. Troubling picture on the front page of the Daily Telegraph. Surrey takes to the street over rape gang. This is after, allegedly, a woman was gang-raped in a church close to Epsom. And Surrey police currently declining to give any details. Now, when you remember the National Police Chief's Council advice following the Merseyside incident involving AR, remember we don't give his name, in deference to the three young girls who lost their lives in Southport, it is strange it would appear that Surrey police are sitting on that. That is also coming up later in the show. A couple of other front pages for you quickly. The UK facing a summer of shortage on the shelves is the front page of the Times, which perhaps comes as no surprise. And for some of you, if, like me, you suffered some damage to a car due to potholes, it's karma, as the Sun calls it. The latest victim is none other than the Cabinet Minister in charge of our roads and indeed fixing the potholes. That would be Transport Secretary Heidi Alexander. Wishing her no bad fortune on that, and I'm pleased to say that she's perfectly all right. Her car is not. She's lost two tyres. She perhaps now is experiencing what many of us are as well. Front page of the LBC app is the concern over at Downing Street. Tech bosses summoned. PM urges new protection for children on social media as that vote, of course, went against it yesterday. Again, something else we might explore with Health Secretary Wes Streeting here, taking your calls later in the show. But let's come to events yesterday. And I haven't mentioned the Iran conflict because I'm holding it for now. And here we are, Sir Keir Starmer at PMQs yesterday, laying out his position.
We're not going to get dragged into this war. It is not our war. And a lot of pressure has been applied to me to take a different course, and that pressure included what happened last night. I'm not going to change my mind. I'm not going to yield. It is not in our national interest to join this war, and we will not do so. I know where I stand.
Sir Keir Starmer. Let's bring into the conversation Sir Jeremy Hunt, who, of course, Conservative MP, served as Chancellor of the Exchequer, served as Foreign Secretary, Tory grandee, if ever there was one, and he joins me now. Sir Jeremy, the position outlined by Sir Keir, everyone's a knight here, and as administered by Sir Lindsay, is it the correct position, Sir Jeremy? Good morning.
Well, thank you for the flattery so early in the morning, Nick, and lovely to be with you. Keir Starmer is right not to join this conflict. We have an unpredictable and unreliable American president. I personally don't think we should close the door on a decades-long alliance with the United States because Trump is not America. And America has been the biggest force for freedom, democracy, prosperity in our lifetimes in the world. But right now, it is very difficult working with America. The problem with Keir Starmer's position, it's fine to say we're not going to be part of this war. But then you've got to say, well, what's the logical conclusion to that? It is we depend on America for our defences in Europe, so we need to build up our own defences. And what he won't do is unblock this argument between the Treasury and the Ministry of Defence, this £28 billion black hole in their funding over the next 4 years that they are very, very worried about, and actually make sure that we stand on our own two feet when it comes to defending the country.
What did you, Sir Jeremy, make of George, now Lord Robertson's broadside, if I may call it that, fired at the Prime Minister, and this corrosive complacency, to use Lord Robertson's words?
Well, you must have had Law Robertson on the show many times, Nick.
Yes, I have.
And, you know, he's a very measured man.
Yeah, he's not so given to hyperbole at all.
Not at all. So for him to come up with something like that, I felt he was desperate. He was just really worried that at a very dangerous time in global affairs, Britain is not doing what it needs to do to defend itself. And I think you know that his first approach would have been to say this in private. But only when he decided that what he was saying in private was completely falling on deaf ears did he decide to go public. And that's why I think it was so damaging. And I just think Keir Starmer needs to get on, make this decision. And by the way, this is a very big opportunity for the British economy. I've said to you many times, our big opportunity with our technology sector is to become the world's next Silicon Valley. And how did the original Silicon Valley start, you know, on the campus of Stanford University in California? It started with the Department of Defense and NASA spending huge amounts on defense. And so this is actually a very big opportunity for the UK if we get it right.
You mentioned what Sir Keir won't do. What he did do yesterday was trying to lay into your party leader, Kemi Badenoch, again for what he perceives as her position in the initial stages of the Iranian conflict. How fair is that attack? And do you think where Kemi Badenoch put you and the party was broadly right in the first weeks?
I do, actually. And I don't think it's fair. And I was one of those people who thought that we should have allowed the US to use our bases. They weren't asking us to get involved in the conflict. And by the way, I don't think it's a smart conflict for the US to do. So why do I say that? It's very straightforward. It's because the US pays for about a third of the cost of defending Europe. We are dependent on the US for the defence of Ukraine at the moment, whether we like it or not. And I felt in that context, it was unwise to tell the US they couldn't use their own bases. But does that mean we should get involved in the war? Absolutely not. It's clearly not been thought through. You know, it has made the world more dangerous.
So, Jeremy, the sketch writers of more than one newspaper, The Mail, The Times, The Daily Express covers it as well, by the way, say that Sir Keir was right to be admonished in the fashion he was by Sir Lindsay Hoyle. It really wasn't Prime Minister's answers to questions whatsoever. What did you make of that admonishment, and what is reported to have been an angry exchange between him, Sir Keir, and Sir Lindsay?
Well, I'm really disappointed, actually, with the way the government is has actually given up on trying to win the argument in the House of Commons. And literally every time the Prime Minister, the Chancellor, any cabinet minister gets up and speaks, even though they've been in office for nearly 2 years, they spend at least half of their speeches attacking the Conservatives. Now, you know, we can have a long discussion about what the Conservatives got right and what the Conservatives got wrong. But frankly, I'm bored with that because, you know, that was the discussion we had at the general election in 2024. What we want to hear now from government ministers is their solutions going forward. And, you know, at a time of an international crisis, normally that's a moment when a prime minister can carry the House of Commons by being statesmanlike and presenting solutions that we all get behind. But when you get all this partisan nonsense, I mean, you know, yesterday, for example, he was accusing the Conservatives on defence spending. Well, I increased defence spending to 2.5% of GDP, and Keir Starmer and Rachel Rees refused to back it. That was at the start of 2024. I'm not saying that to justify my own record, and of course I got things wrong too. But I'm just pointing out that why are we having this discussion right now when we've got a war in the Gulf? We've got a war in Ukraine. We've got armed forces that are clearly not getting the funding they need. That's the solution that we need the Prime Minister to be talking about.
Let's talk a little bit about money. Last couple of minutes or so together, as a former Chancellor of the Exchequer, you've probably heard already this morning, growth up by 0.5% for February. Good news. You'd have hoped for better. It's not as where it should be. Your reaction as a former Chancellor, Jeremy?
Well, I think growth is a bit of a yo-yo, and it's a bit of a mug's game to overinterpret a monthly figure. And, you know, Rachel Rees is in a very difficult position because she and I and you and your listeners have got absolutely no idea what the oil price is going to be when she delivers the budget. So I think in a situation like this, don't worry about the things you can't control. Get on and deal with the things you can. What is the biggest single thing that would transform growth in the British economy almost overnight it is getting down energy prices. And, you know, right now, our nuclear power costs double the price of French nuclear power. We have to switch off half the electricity generated from our enormous wind farms off the North Sea because the national grid can't absorb the electricity. We still have to pay for it, but we don't get it. Those are the things that could actually bring down our energy bills. And I think that's the big thing now, the big opportunity. You know, the civil servants always have this phrase. They say, never waste a good crisis. Well, in a crisis like the one we've got now, chancellors and prime ministers can take big, difficult decisions that are harder in normal times. And that's what I'd like them to get on and do.
While acknowledging it is an oil tanker, the current health secretary, who's joining us later here to take listeners' questions, says the NHS is improving. As a former and long-serving health secretary, A, do you agree? B, what question would you ask of Mr. Streeting?
Well, I think the truth is that the NHS is really flatlining. I think it's very hard to say when you talk to people on the ground that it's getting much better. You know, I actually have a lot of respect for Wes Streeting. But I would say, where are the big structural reforms that are actually going to transform the experience of people who use the NHS day to day? One of Labour's manifesto promises, for example, is it's going to go back to everyone having their own doctor, bringing back the family doctors that we haven't had since 2004-05. That would be a brilliant thing. I mean, that would also transform if you know, you had your own team of midwives from the moment you a woman is told that she's pregnant. That would transform the experience of pregnancy. I'd like to see more of those structural reforms. And I'd like to see Mr. Streeting spend less time telling us how brilliant things are now compared to 2 years ago, because frankly, I don't think that's what people think on the ground. And again, it's that same old thing of wasting that opportunity cabinet ministers have with partisan attacks instead of actually telling us what they're going to do to make things better.
Lastly, a little over 20 miles away from the good folk of Godalming and Ash is Epsom, and there is concern there after an alleged gang rape of a woman in a church. Surrey police currently declining to give any form of description, which is worrying locals. This despite last August, the National Police Chiefs Council releasing guidance after the Merseyside incident, in which they did not release details of AR, the Southport killer. How concerned are you for the folk of the, just not far from your patch? Sir Jeremy.
It's an absolutely horrific thing, this. It's very, very scary for everyone when you hear these stories. But obviously, if it's local to you, it's even more scary. I don't know the details as to why Surrey Police are doing this, but I would just urge them to learn the lessons from elsewhere in the country.
Grateful for your time as ever. Thanks. Jeremy Hunt, former Chancellor, former Foreign Secretary, also Health Secretary as well, joining in for many matters, not least the Iranian conflict. Coming up after the news, we go into the world of business and in an associated story.
As petrol and diesel skyrocket with the war in Iran, could this be the moment people put down the pumps and pick up the plug for an electric car? I'm LBC's George Ike at Vauxhall HQ in Coventry.
That's to come. Time now, though. You're listening to the Nick Ferrari Breakfast Show with the 7:30 news headlines from Dominic Ellis.
The Prime Minister has told LBC the status quo of online safety for children still isn't good enough and will change under his direction. The fresh warning comes as bosses from the likes of YouTube and Snapchat have been summoned for talks at Downing Street today. Two people have been arrested after an attempted arson attack on a synagogue in North London. Finchley Reform Synagogue was targeted with suspected petrol bombs on Tuesday. And the economy grew by more than expected in the month before the start of the Iran war. Figures for the Office for National Statistics says GDP grew by 0.5% in February. LBC weather, a mix of sunny spells and showers for large parts of the UK. Through today, some heavy downpours in northern areas, a high of 16 degrees.
On the latest episode of The News Agents.
Should MPs ban social media for the under-16s on their smartphones and devices? It's been tried in Australia. It's got popular public support, so why isn't Keir Starmer backing it yet?
Get the latest episode of The News Agents with Emily Maitlis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Our pet's in a pickle. We're here when it matters most. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
How about Specsave ears?
Not sure.
Do you get it? Specsave ears?
Yeah, but no.
Oh, okay. Specs, and we also do hearing two savers.
Think about it. Should have gone to Specs and we also do hearing two savers.
Can't see it catching on.
Okay, so we're saying Specsavers do eyes and ears. Senses savers.
Technically true.
Yeah?
But actually terrible.
Oh.
At Specsavers, we're hearing experts too, and have been for over 20 years.
Oh, should we just stick to Specsavers then?
Yeah.
Book a free hearing check today.
Dreaming of a new kitchen? Getting started couldn't be easier. At Wix, you can begin planning your new kitchen with our design consultants. Simply arrange a free home measure or an in-store design consultation. Book your free kitchen design appointment and turn all your ideas into reality at Wix.
Hey, you! Yeah, you! What would you like from your investing app? 6% interest on your ISA, a free share of your choice, or no commission on stocks and ETFs up to €100,000 per month? With XTB, you get all of the above all in one app, the XTB app. Get your free share and start investing with XTB today. XTB, where your money works.
Capital at risk. Investment values can rise or fall. Limited free stock availability. 2% ISA rate boost for 90 days. New clients only. T's and C's apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345-6060-973.
7:35. Well, as regards those growth figures, I've given them to you. We've had some interpretation from a former chancellor. Let's bring Kathleen Brooks, who's a financial analyst and research director at the trading platform XTB, in for more detail. Kathleen, if you would, just start by reminding everyone what the figure is and then an interpretation from you, if you would. Morning to you, Kathleen.
Morning, Nick. Yes, so the economy grew by 0.5% last month and the 3 months to February as well. And now markets were expecting a 0.1% increase. So it's a much better than expected figure. The economy was strong across kind of the three main areas that they measure. So services, that's like going out, doing things, production and manufacturing, and also construction. And that is really important because construction had been very, very weak over the December and January and really kind of weighed on growth. So construction also bounced back just last month. But this data, obviously, Nick, looks very out of date now. It's just till February, and obviously, it doesn't take the hit from the energy price spike and the war in Iran and the Middle East. So,
well, that's very much what former Chancellor Sir Jeremy Hunt, indeed, he was Chancellor until 2024. He said that it's a bit of a mug's game going month by month. You should look at six monthly or indeed annual figures. Would you broadly concur with that, Kathleen?
I think I would. And, you know, that even the ONS, who produce these figures, also produce a quarterly figure. So one for the 3 months leading up to the month. So month-on-month data is very, very volatile. So I think what Jeremy Hunt is insinuating there is that we're not going to probably see this in March. This is a one-off, but it is bad timing that the war happened when it did, because the UK economy was just getting back on its feet after a really rough few months. So, look at what the IMF has said, Nick.
Yeah.
You know, we're expected to take the biggest hit to growth from this war, from the energy price spike. So it seems like this could be a bit of a one-hit wonder, what we've seen today.
You've mentioned the war. The impact of that is on the front page of one of the newspapers, a summer of shortage on the shelves. Can you give us a bit more background on that, Kathleen?
Yeah, sure. So this comes down to shortages of certain foods and other products, actually, including medicines, due to the supply of CO2 or carbon dioxide. That comes from, believe it or not, the Middle East as well, and needs to pass through that Strait of Hormuz, which remains closed. The government is looking at this really, really closely because of a couple of reasons. Carbon dioxide is absolutely critical for increasing the shelf life of foods like salads, packaged meats, breads. It's also very important for fizzy drinks. And, you know, what's coming up on June the 11th? That would be the World Cup. So if you want a nice cold fizzy lager, we got to really hope that the Strait of Hormuz remains open. Now, this isn't what's going to happen. This is just a scenario analysis. We do produce our own CO2 in this country as well, just not enough of it. But they have, the government has restarted the ENSIS plant in Teesside. So that was restarted in March for 3 months to produce our own CO2. And I guess some people will be saying, well, why don't we just keep it open instead of closing it after 3 months? But there are some mitigating factors. But this, there are no shortages expected. It's more that kind of the product range will be a lot lower. The government also needs to prioritise CO2 for medical purposes because it's used for the transport of things like organs, of blood donations.
Right.
And it's also important for drugs and some medicines as well. So things like aspirin and paracetamol. So it's a rocky time, and the government has to kind of fight back many battles at the moment. But on terms of trying to get the Strait of Hormuz opened up, that should be kind of number one priority, I think.
On the subject of drugs, of course, just to remind everyone again, Health Secretary Wes Streeting is joining us in London, yep, 2 hours' time. Finally, you mentioned the pub, although the way that one of the home nations, England, is playing at the moment, I don't think there'll be much to celebrate in the World Cup. We'll have to hope some of our other nations do better. But talking about pubs, people might not know Stonegate, but they'll know Slug and Lettuce. What's the news coming from that
group?
What's the news coming
out? Yes, that's the UK's largest pub chain. They reported their results, and it's not great news. They sold 100 pubs last year because they're battling like rapidly rising debt levels, falling sales. Sales sunk and revenue sunk £128 million last year to £1.6 billion. But it actually didn't help to boost profits at all. And its debt pile rose sharply to £3.81 billion. Now, get this, right? It's costing them £441 million a year to finance that debt. Now, it's owned by private equity, which is the same company that also owns Asda, which is also saddled with debt. So that's going to lead to quite a few questions. But it's not all because of the private equity. It's also because of just changing trends. You know, there's falling sales. We know people are going to pubs less. And also things like national insurance costs and other tax rises. They're really hurting the pub business. That's why the government did give the hospitality sector that bailout earlier this year. But it's down, but it's not out at Stonegate. But it's certainly in a tricky position as well.
No way to say cheers, unfortunately, to that news, Kathleen Brooks. Thank you, your financial analyst and research director of the trading platform XTB, taking us to 7:40. This is what you're saying about the release of those prisoners, the story with which we started the show. Bob in Bracknell, I don't understand why there are no DNA checks before a prisoner is released. The use of DNA and biometric checks would add another level. Chris in Somerset, this is an interesting one. Could we microchip each prisoner? It does work on dogs and cats. I mean, microchip, I don't know. Tagging, why not tag them? Because some of them might have been tagged in an early life anyway. Is that the answer? Although Kat says, it's not hard. Create a system where the prisoner has to scan their fingerprints before leaving. If it matches the system, they are the correct person and they can leave. We'll come back to that. But let's come back to business matters. And unsurprisingly, there's been an increase in the number of people looking to buy electric cars since the war in Iran began. It's as petrol prices rose consecutively for 43 days, costing you significantly more at the pumps. Now, Vauxhall has told LBC interest in their EVs, electric vehicles, is up by some 20%. And LBC's Midlands reporter, George Ike, has been to the Coventry HQ to find out more.
With most of us forking out between an extra £15 to £30 every time we fill up right now, drivers are not only buckling up, but strapping in, waiting to see how much their tank of fuel will be. So it's no surprise that more people are looking to go from this to this. LBC can reveal that interest in electric vehicles is on the rise by almost 20% at Vauxhall since the war in Iran began.
Well, what we can clearly see already in web statistics is a lot more interest in EVs. Transition to an electric vehicle has only become far, far more compelling as a result of some of those petrol and diesel prices going up considerably in the last few weeks.
That's Eric Drews, the MD at Vauxhall and Stellantis here in Coventry. He says for people who charge an SUV-sized vehicle at home, it can be a lot cheaper than a fossil fuel engine.
Probably charge that vehicle for roughly £5 to go from zero to a full charge. If you compare that to some of the public charging solutions, particularly if we go to the most expensive, most extreme, let's say on a motorway, then that could be up to a 75.
But it's not just motorway charging that could prove to be a problem as people make the jump, with a postcode lottery of councils charging different amounts to allow car owners without driveways to charge up at home.
Yeah, this is always a challenge in any environment when you have local authorities working in slightly different ways across the country, and one of the challenges for sure is that we have identified nearly £1,000 difference between the highest cost and the lowest cost for someone wanting to install across the curb. So we really would love to see a situation where more unity can be found across the country.
So, as petrol prices rose for 43 consecutive days and online retailers elsewhere reporting a 30% surge in searches for used EVs, could this be the moment we see more people putting down the pumps and picking up the plugs?
No, because it's too expensive and I can't afford electric cars.
Well, I've got a hybrid, so I'm not struggling too much, but I can completely understand. My partner has a diesel car, it's costing a fortune, so yeah, it's something that we have considered, definitely, yeah.
I dare say it might come down again a little bit. At the moment I'm diesel, so I've been thinking for a while I might go petrol, so I might go electric then.
People are not going to be able to afford it, what with everything else going up.
Reform's Robert Jenrick says the conflict in Iran shouldn't be pushing people to change car, but that the government should be cutting VAT on petrol.
We should be just trying to help people right now who are finding life very tough, lighten the load, cut the cost of their energy bills, whether it's for their car, their home, or their small business. That is Reform's priority.
And a spokesperson for the government said that they know motorists are paying more at the pumps because of the war in Iran. They said it's not our war, and that's why the British government didn't join it, and they've extended the 5p fuel duty cut, urging for de-escalation in the Middle East.
LBC's George Ike reporting. So, have you now sold, got rid of the diesel or the unleaded, the petrol car, and as to use this expression, plugging in? Do give me a call if you're now in love with electric cars. I'm still not tempted, but I can absolutely understand why many of you are, not least when you drive past those fuel forecourts and you see the prices going up, not quite on a daily basis, but virtually. Now, coming up later in the show...
Strikes, shortages and sorting out the NHS. Wes Streeting takes your calls today ahead of crunch news stats on waiting lists. I'm LBC's Natasha Clark with a full preview.
Yes, LBC's Natasha Clark will preview that, of course, after this. Let's get the latest news headlines now. 7:45, Dominic Ellis.
Ahead of a Downing Street summit today, the Prime Minister has told LBC that social media companies need to step up to protect children or face stark consequences. Official figures show the UK economy grew by a faster than expected 0.5% in February, and it's emerged an average of 3 prisoners a week were freed by mistake in England and Wales over the past year. LBC weather, a mix of sunny spells and showers for large parts of the UK, some heavy downpours in northern areas, a high of 16 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. It's very slow on the M25 clockwise from Junction 5 at the M26 to the Clackett Lane services. It's because a motorbike broke down and one lane is closed for recovery. Also delays in Dollis Hill because Dudden Hill Lane is closed both ways after an accident. In Park Royal, Acton Lane is closed both ways because of an ongoing investigation, and that means it's very busy in the area. The A40 remains closed both ways between the Northern Roundabout and the Marylebone Flyover because of the ongoing works. Definitely do expect delays. In fact, it is very busy on the M4 eastbound onto the elevated section, and the A4's busier than usual. And Great Western Railway services are delayed by about 20 minutes between West Ealing and Greenford.
This is LBC.
At Tesco, we know that beans...
Mains Heinz.
And you love to ask.
Have you had yours?
All of you.
Love it.
Hate it.
And because...
I'm worth it.
When you need low prices on brands you love, like 150 grams of Heinz beans, 12-pack of Weetabix, 250 grams of Marmite, or 700 millilitres of L'Oreal Elvive Colour Protect Shampoo, look out for the Everyday Low Prices logo in-store and online. Tesco. Every little helps. Everyday low prices includes thousands of products across the majority of larger stores and online prices held until the 10th of May. Selected branded products only.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Experience. It's knowing the difference between a good deal and, well, a great deal. That's why right now you can get a £250 gift card when you take out Saga Health Insurance. You get 24/7 GP access whenever you want it. And the freedom to choose your preferred private hospital with your own room should you need it. Search Saga Health Insurance for a quote today. Start a new policy before the 28th of May. New customers over 50 only. Terms and conditions apply.
With an Amex business card, Selena's earning points renovating her skin clinic and refreshing the builders.
14 coffees and 28 sugars, please.
And on new adjustable chairs for every room. And she can use the points to lie back and relax.
Don't put ice cream on your brother's head.
Well, Sometimes. And that's because with an Amex business card, your points can go towards holidays and more.
Search Amex business card. Interest, fees and terms apply. Available to UK limited companies and limited liability partnerships. Signatories must be a director or member of the business. Subject to approval.
Oh, you want weight loss advice?
Weight loss? Actually, what you want to do...
I got my weight loss secret from my mother, who got it from her mother's...
My tip is...
Weight loss?
I... No, forget that.
Never, you just keep dancing.
Dragon fruit.
Podcast.
Advice.
Or you could go to MedExpress. MedExpress. Healthcare without the noise. Go to medexpress.co.uk/weightloss.
Ali 60 milligram hard capsules contain orlistat for overweight adults with a BMI of 28 plus. Follow a reduced calorie, low fat diet. Always read the label.
High pressure sales tactics, huge site fee increases and a loss of value have left many holiday park homeowners feeling misled, angry and trapped. The Holiday Park Advice Center can help claim back any money you're owed. Text advice to 78900.
Hello, Holiday Park Advice Center.
That's advice to 78900.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
7:49, isn't it interesting you mentioned electric cars and understandably the calls you want to talk about it. Rudy, Jody will come to you in just a moment. Just want to look ahead now, though, to what's coming up later on the show. I've mentioned on a number of occasions, it's called The Cabinet, exclusively on LBC, and it's Wes Streeting, Health Secretary, one perhaps one could argue of the better performers in the Cabinet to date. LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark, joins me now with a preview of what we might hear and, of course, some of the challenges Mr. Streeting faces. Morning to you, Natasha.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, I think you're completely right. He is one of the better performers in the government, of course, and there's always a news line where Streeting is concerned. So lots to watch out for today. And, of course, I'm sure the first thing you'll want to talk to him about is the latest response to last week's strikes. It went basically ahead without a hitch, didn't it? We didn't have... Obviously, we had the doctors on the picket lines, but we didn't have a whole lot of operations being cancelled. I'm sure he'll want to talk about that. Streeting said last week he wanted to speak directly now to the BMA committee. He feels that they are the people holding the whole country now to ransom. He spoke to you about this, about those striking doctors, when he came on with you last time.
I don't pretend to have solved everything for resident doctors or for the NHS in less than 2 years as the Health Secretary. All I ask of the BMA is to accept that I can't solve all of the problems in less than 2 years. It is going to take time. It does cost money that is in short supply. So there needs to be some give and take, and we need to do this together. The government's done a lot of giving. The BMA's done a lot of taking. I've not seen much compromise from them in the middle.
Interesting, Nick. I've been talking to people in the Department for Health about these strikes and about the fact that they might, I think, go on and on now because they feel that the BMA are just so unrelenting here and that there is this cabal of doctors on the resident doctors on the BMA's committee that is now basically not going to sign up to any deal, they fear. So we could be on track for more strikes to come. And, of course, on sorting out the NHS, Wes Streeting has got a big job on his hands. He wrote for LBC earlier this week. He said, we're taking the NHS from the worst crisis in our history, putting it back on its feet. He again is sticking to this promise to make sure that 92% of patients are seen within 18 weeks from referral to treatment. That is a target, Nick, that's not been met since 2015, so a very ambitious target for this Labour government. We'll be comparing him against those statistics when those stats come out at 9:30 today. Streeting has also promised you that he will end corridor care by the end of this Parliament, so I'm sure you'll be pressing him on that. Of course, the war in Iran is going to feature, I'm sure, in your discussion. You spoke with the chief executive of NHS England, Jim Mackey. He told you how seriously worried he was about medicine supplies. He said the UK imports 75% of its medicine. That might include things like painkillers, antibiotics, cancer treatments, blood pressure medication. Reports this morning about shortages of CO2 on the front page of the Times newspaper. Yes. And finally, Nick, I really want you to put this to him. The comments that he made to Lewis Goodall on Sunday about Scottish independence, it's blown up online. He says there's going to be no Scottish independence referendum if indeed the SNP win, as they are predicted to at the moment in those local Scottish elections. So that is going to be a really, really controversial thing for the Health Secretary to get involved in at this time of the campaign.
Natasha Clark, LBC's political editor, reporting. Much to get through with Wes. Let's talk electric cars now, though. 8 minutes before eight. And according to Vauxhall and other manufacturers, interest is soaring. Rudy in Bristol. Can I persuade you to get into one, Rudy? What would it take? Good morning.
That's the biggest car that's going to cost them more money, and let me explain to you why. I'll explain to you why. First of all, the depreciation value will be almost half within a year of buying an electric car. Then you've got, for example, the cost of electricity to charge it. I know they said you can charge it at home, but people using it every day will have to use filling stations where the prices are extortionate to fill an electric car, and you have to wait nearly an hour. And then I can go on with the paper mile.
Where I am with you, sir, is, look, if you're fortunate enough, I don't know whether you do, but if you have a driveway or if you have an area where you can get your car off the road, but so many people now, of course, don't. They park on the street and there'll be cables for everyone to go flying over. I am with you on that, Rudy.
But also the paper mile they're bringing in, and also the cost of the road, the first registration fee is extortionate, and so is the road fund license because of the cost of the vehicle was over a certain price.
You will
so
never
when you add it all up,
you'll never. I sense you will never be tempted out, though, Lou.
No, and I like the freedom of being going into a petrol station, 10 minutes in to fill up, not waiting half an hour, 45 minutes to charge, plus the queue to get in to charge, and then they don't mention where it's the biggest con is that we're putting all that extra strain on the energy grid, and they're saying that we're having blackouts.
Rudy, thank you. You're not for turning. Jody in Edinburgh. Would you get in an electric vehicle? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Yeah, I have an electric vehicle. I've done for around, I don't know, 10 years now. Went through the process of first getting a hybrid vehicle and then going full electric. And I've had three electric vehicles now.
Okay.
The first few on lease and then obviously I now own one.
Right.
Really sounded quite angry about people who want electric vehicles there. But
yeah.
I mean, my point that I think is quite clear about the problems at the moment is that the vehicle excise duty for electric vehicles is the starting price of it is £195 per year.
Right.
And that's for the cheaper EV variety, and that obviously goes up depending on the value of the car when you purchase it.
Yes.
So it seems to me that the government are quite keen on not helping combustion engine users, combustion engine users with any reduction on VAT.
You'd like to see the road fund cut down on an electric vehicle, I'm assuming, is that right?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, naturally, I would like to have a cheaper tax liability for my car, but
do you know how much you're saving a week, a month, a year? Have you worked out what the savings actually represent, Jody?
Not off of the top of my head. Obviously, these things are present in all of the apps that you get for most electric vehicles, but I definitely feel a lot better in the pocket than I did when I was driving
a regular car. Diesel or petrol. Jody, safe driving, thank you. Simon says, I have an electric car for 6 years. I do 20,000 miles a year. It's the best thing I ever did. Cost is ridiculously low versus petrol. Andy, I bought an electric car. You get ripped off by the garages. £170 diagnostic charge as soon as you walk through the door. You can't get anything fixed without it. And I've got a Stellantis EV electric vehicle. I lost braking and steering on a motorway and I had to nurse it to a stop. 67 software errors. Craig in Staffordshire, just bought my first electric car last August. After being a real petrol head, I would never go back. Best decision I ever made. Justin in Purley, are you equally supportive of the idea? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I am indeed, yes. About 3 years ago, a gentleman called Sadiq Khan bought the ULEZ scheme to my area.
Yep.
And I had to change my van.
I did a lot of folk.
Yeah, we did indeed. Yeah, I mean, the best bit was that Sadiq Khan gave me £9,500 to get my new van through various schemes that he was offering at the time. So my new van only cost me £1,000, and it cost me £1,000 to get a home charger.
Right.
And I now charge my van up once a week, and it cost me roughly £8.75 a week.
A week? For fuel, effectively?
It. Yep, that's it. Yeah, for one week, I'll charge it up. I'll charge up overnight, and that's it. It's done. I've got a little app that tells me exactly how much I'm spending on it, and it's wonderful. It's really cool.
I'd never drag you back into a diesel transit or whatever it was you were running, would you? Would I?
I loved my van. I absolutely loved my white van, but now I have this. I'm not going back, Nick.
Safe driving. £8.74. Wow, white van man or white van woman. Listen to that. Safe driving, Justin. Andrew in Warrington. Andrew, are you plugging in or filling up?
I'm plugging in. We've got two electric cars.
Right.
It's the best thing we've ever done. I was a big diesel head before that.
Right.
It cost me £4 to charge them overnight with 5p per kilowatt
rating. It's been brilliant. Not just that as well. In the freezing cold winters, you get into a warm car if it's defrosted. No effort.
Hang on. Why is an electric car warm and a petrol? I don't understand.
On your phone, you tap the app to warm my car.
Oh, but you can do that on some petrol cars, can't you?
Some petrol cars, expensive ones you can,
Yeah.
But it costs a lot of fuel to do it as well.
What about range? The one thing that worries me is range, Andrew. You've never had any problems.
So the one I'm in now is an ID5. It's a company car. I get 260 miles for one charge.
Yeah.
It does me fine. My wife's car's only 170 miles, but it's just a run around for her. But when I see everyone filling up at the fuel tanks and I'm looking at the petrol prices now, it's a no-brainer.
You just drive on by.
Solar panels fitted as well, so currently I'm charging for free.
Well done, Andrew. Let's get one last call. So many people want to talk about electric vehicles. Terence in Hackney, are you in one? Are you plugging in or filling up?
No, I've been a plug-in for close to 11 years. I was probably one of the first
early
people.
Adopter.
Yeah. And this is both for a van for our business and a personal car. Nick, I have saved thousands, and I laugh when I get involved in calls like you just had a few moments ago. I've literally saved tens of thousands of pounds. The servicing costs are... tens of thousands of pounds, okay. I'm telling you, right? Because of what we would have been spending on not just fuel, congestion charge, parking. I mean, I was an early adopter, so I took advantage of all of that. We had tax breaks, everything else. We reckon we've saved probably close to £30,000 over the years.
Safe driving to you. Thank you. So many people want to talk about electric vehicles. We might not come back to it today, but we definitely will come back to it again. And safe driving to all of you, whether you're electric, petrol, diesel, whatever it might be. To Epsom, where residents clashed with police yesterday in a row over an alleged gang rape.
We literally just want descriptions. Right now, these women and girls do not know who they need to be looking out for.
Why reluctance from the police to give details, particularly after National Police Chief Council ruling last year? Staying with police matters, two arrests after an attempted firebombing in a synagogue in North London. The Conservatives are calling for compliance with that Supreme Court ruling, protect women and girls 12 months to the day on. And, of course, Health Secretary Wes Streeting taking your call. That's in the next hour, the 9 o'clock hour. But the 8 o'clock news now on LBC is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock. The Prime Minister has told LBC the status quo of online safety for children still isn't good enough and will change under his direction. The warning comes as bosses from the likes of YouTube and Snapchat have been summoned for talks at Downing Street today. A consultation on a potential Australian-style social media ban is running until May, but Andy Burrows from the Molly Rose Foundation says children are still finding ways now to bypass safeguards.
There are examples of children who found ingenious workarounds, they're using VPNs, they've got an adult to open an account for them. But in most cases, children aren't actually needing to try and find those workarounds because the tech companies really are just dragging their heels.
Sir Keir Starmer has written exclusively for LBC on the issue of social media. You can read more on the LBC app. The United States says it is holding indirect talks with Iran about resuming peace negotiations in Pakistan later this week. White House officials have also expressed optimism about extending the ceasefire beyond next Wednesday. It's understood senior Labour figures have moved to warn the government to move quicker to find ways to increase defence spending. MPs and peers have rejected calls by opposition parties for defence to be funded by welfare cuts as it risks potentially losing public support. Earlier this week, a former head of NATO, Lord Robertson, warned that a lack of defence investment has left the UK in peril. Former Conservative Chancellor Sir Jeremy Hunt told Nick this morning the Prime Minister needs to take decisive action.
It's fine to say we're not going to be part of this war. But then you've got to say, well, what's the logical conclusion to that? It is we depend on America for our defences in Europe, so we need to build up our own defences. And what he won't do is unblock this argument between the Treasury and the Ministry of Defence, this £28 billion black hole in their funding over the next 4 years that they are very, very worried about, and actually make sure that we stand on our own 2 feet.
Ministers insist the defence investment plan will be published as soon as possible. Official figures show the British economy grew by more than expected in the month before the start of the Iran war. GDP grew by 0.5% in February. And one in 10 online pharmacies say they've had their websites cloned by platforms selling fake weight loss jabs. The National Pharmacy Association has urged patients to be wary of prices that seem too good to be true. It's also written to the Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, calling for stronger safeguards for patients. Mr. Streeting will join Nick Ferrari at breakfast live to take your calls on LBC's Call the Cabinet later this morning. In the city, the FTSE 100 has just reopened at 10,559. It closed down 49 yesterday. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.14. LBC weather, a mix of sunny spells and showers for large parts of the UK through today. Some heavy downpours in northern areas by the late afternoon with a high of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
At Lidl, we're giving you 50% off a fruit or veg item on your next shop. Just scan the Lidl Plus app at checkout, and when you scan, you'll be in with a chance to win your whole shop back. Open Lidl Plus and start saving today. Lidl, more to value. 18 plus GB residents, various prices available, subject to availability, end 30th of 5th, 26. Full T's and C's apply. See lidl.co.uk/lp-terms.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning, Jeff. 4 minutes after eight on Thursday, the 16th of April. Silence in Surrey over people who might have been involved in an alleged gang rape, and now residents clash with police. Have we got another Epping on our hands? Have we got another Merseyside? And what of the National Police Chief Council advice? Totally ignored, it seemed, ignored by Surrey Police. We'll look at that in more detail. And what of that social media ban? Failed, of course, in that vote yesterday. Sir Keir Starmer said last month,
we need to do more to protect children. That's why we're consulting about issues such as banning social media for under-16s.
Is there anything they ever take a decision on that doesn't have to go to a commission, a review, or in this instance, consultation? Surely this is a case where just take action, as it is reported. Young people are still taking their lives or causing serious injury to themselves. In other news, criminality, it would appear, in Finchley with an attempted firebombing of a synagogue. These people live close to the Finchley Reform Synagogue.
The current climate, the Jewish community is under attack. I feel scared, and I'm scared for the Jewish people that come to the synagogue here.
I have never known the Jewish community so uneasy.
12 months since that key Supreme Court ruling, seen to protect women and girls in their individual spaces. Why the delay? Again, something else they put out for further consultation, like the defence review. Can they ever make a decision about anything? And someone who's got a lot of tough decisions to make to turn around the National Health Service is Health Secretary Wes Streeting. Now, he's joining us later in the next hour to take your calls. And one of the thorniest issues he has to handle is, of course, the resident doctors' strikes.
All I ask of the BMA is to accept that I can't solve all of the problems in less than 2 years. It is going to take time.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
To Epsom. More discord, more unrest with local residents. I have to say, an area that I know moderately well, not far from that sort of footballer's belt where all the rich players, particularly some Chelsea players, live. But I'm afraid there were some ugly scenes yesterday. Caused this anger? Well, protesters have demanded Surrey Police release descriptions and CCTV footage of men suspected of gang raping a woman outside a church in Surrey. The woman, believed to be in her 20s, had been followed and then attacked by a group of men after leaving a nightclub. Last night, dozens of protesters demanded police release descriptions. If you allow me, and there's very good coverage, as I have to say, in today's Daily Telegraph, this is what happened. A man called Pete addressed the ranks of officers, police officers, with a microphone. This will take me some time, but I think it's important. Pete said, quotes, "We came here today to deliver a letter to the police. Unfortunately, we've not been able to do that, but they very kindly joined us. Let's read that letter. I'm writing as a deeply concerned resident of Epsom to formally request clarity and assurance following reports of a serious and distressing incident. It's been widely discussed. Within the community, a 20-year-old woman was subjected to a prolonged and violent assault reportedly in a churchyard. What is compounding is the apparent lack of publicly available information. There's been no clear communication about whether suspects have been identified, apprehended, or whether there is any longer a risk to the public. The absence of detail has led to widespread speculation, misinformation, and growing unease. As residents, we fully appreciate the need for discretion during active investigations. However, we believe it's essential the public is provided with appropriate updates and reassurances. Well, there doesn't seem anything wrong with that, for me, particularly if you live in or around Epsom, and you have children. Well, it doesn't matter if you have children. You just fear for your own safety. A little under an hour ago, I was speaking with former Chancellor and Foreign Secretary Sir Jeremy Hunt about other matters, financial matters, the conflict in Iran. But he is the MP for a neighbouring constituency, Godalming and Ash. It's about 20-plus miles from Epsom. So what was his reaction to this unrest?
It's an absolutely horrific thing, this. It's very, very scary for everyone when you hear these stories. But obviously, if it's local to you, it's even more scary. I don't know the details as to why Surrey Police are doing this, but I would just urge them to learn the lessons from elsewhere in the country.
Let's turn to Donna Jones, who's Police and Crime Commissioner for Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. She has served as National Criminal Justice Lead for the Association of Police and Crime Commissioners, or the APCC, and joins me now. Commissioner, given that last August, you'll be aware, the National Police Chiefs Council released interim guidance urging police to share suspects in the aftermath of the Merseyside incident involving AR, the Southport killer. How surprised are you by the Surrey action? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Well, first of all, I just want to say my thoughts are with the victim. What an absolutely awful, life-changing event that she's just gone through, and I hope she's getting the support she needs. But sadly, we are hearing incidents like this all too often now. And my force, actually, in Hampshire is one that had grappled with a situation not dissimilar to this, with a young girl being raped outside, you know, after she'd been to a nightclub outside the steps, ironically, of our Crown Court last year. And this led to protests and a whole load of other things. And my force really did learn, and it was before the National Police Chiefs Council issued that guidance that you've just referred to. Now, there's two things here, I think, that are going on, and it's very difficult for me to speculate on the Surrey situation, and because it's a live investigation, I'm going to talk in the round here. Police forces have been reticent historically to release information. Let's just talk hypothetically here about someone's religion, ethnicity, whatever it might be, because they feel like that could inflame situations. What we're now seeing in the 24/7 digital age, media available, information available, you know, 24/7, 24 hours a day, is that it's actually the lack of information now that creates just as much angst as not giving it. And so I really do think that for police forces up and down the country, they really do need to be looking at that police chief's guidance, at forces where things have gone wrong. You mentioned Merseyside from, you know, 18 months ago, looking at these things to see what can be learned, because actually withholding information can be more inflaming and create more angst and community tension than giving it.
The line that really hits me, Commissioner, is from this man who is some form of community leader. Quotes, there's been no clear communication about whether suspects have been identified, apprehended, or whether there is any longer a risk to the public. You can totally buy into their concerns over in Epsom, can't you?
You really can. And, you know, if your victim gives you a clear description, now, you know, what I don't know about this one, but no. Let's say there was more than one person they're looking for here.
It's believed there was, yes, it believed more
exactly.
than one. Yeah, a number.
So her recall of these people maybe not be great, and she's just been through a very traumatic incident. So actually it might be they're doing door-to-door, they're looking at ring doorbells around the church, great, you know, it could be a whole lot of things that are going on. So it's not for me to speculate. I know nothing about the Surrey investigation at all, but sometimes, you know, they need to make sure the information they're putting out is correct, and I'm sure that Surrey Police are doing that and will get information out as soon as they possibly can.
Donna Jones, your Police and Crime Commissioner for Hampshire and the Isle of Wight, thank you as ever for your input, Donna, coming up to 12 minutes after 8. Listen to that is Ali Mirage, my LBC colleague. Saturdays and Sundays, of course, from 12 noon, and joins me now. Last year it was Epping. This year it is Epsom. Ali, what needs to be done? Morning to you, Governor.
Morning, Nick. Look, if we lived in a world when, the only thing that pervading social media were your words of wisdom, it would all be fine. But unfortunately, we don't, right? So Don is right. There's a lot of misinformation and disinformation around. And against that backdrop, I think the National Police Chiefs Council got it right last year when they said that the information pertaining to the identity of suspects should be released immediately. Now, look, you've got to be careful about prejudicing prejudicing court trials and other things. But if you're living in a situation where, on the one hand, if someone drives into a bunch of people in Merseyside celebrating Liverpool's Premiership win, and then the police immediately release that that suspect is white and British, but they don't tell us that supposedly Afghan asylum seekers are allegedly attributed an assault in Warwickshire, people think, hang on, this is a bit two-tier, and then they fill in the blanks themselves. So that's the backdrop. And I remember last year when Yvette Cooper was still Home Secretary, she had said that this guidance from the National Police Chiefs Council was a great step forward and that the public wanted greater transparency. She's absolutely right, Nick. The police, yes, they need to be sensible. Yes, they need to be measured and careful, but they should release the ethnicity and that should not prejudice any future trial.
Coping with social media for policing, how is that to be achieved, Ali?
It's a very difficult job, Nick. I mean, you and I both know that social media is the Wild West. It's a world of its own. And the police have a very, very difficult job, right? So they have to balance hysteria out there and the potential for unrest, which we saw on the back of Axel Rudi-Cabana. But back then, when we're hearing about some chap from Cardiff who's just gone and committed the murders of three schoolgirls, I mean, people fulfill the blanks in themselves. And that's the danger. And no one wants to see the kind of unrest we saw on those streets when that happened back then. So it's a difficult job for the police. But I would always say transparency now is the way forward because we're living in a new world.
Ali, always good hearing from you. Thank you. And you can hear Ali at Mirage on LBC every Saturday and every Sunday from 12 noon, 14 minutes after 8. Let me tell you what Surrey police are saying. And I quote, at this early stage, we do not have full descriptions of any potential suspects. We will release further details once we have them. Now, if they're seeking that, and I've been covering police stories for a few years now, you need to say that, and I'm going to completely make this up. Three middle-aged white men wearing hooded tops were, we think, seen in the area of Surrey Church at around 2 o'clock in the morning getting into a white van. Any details, please let us know. How do they expect people to say, because if they suddenly saw those three men racing through another part of Surrey or whatever, how do they think information is going to be forthcoming if you don't give us a clue, if you don't give us a start? And I read again, I think the most powerful part of what was said in Epsom yesterday, there's been no clear communication about whether suspects have been identified, apprehended, or whether there is any longer a risk to the public. The public have a right to know. You can't police in the Dixon and Doc Green days of the 50s and 60s with social media. We have moved on. Talking about policing, an attempted firebombing of a synagogue in London. Frank lives close to the scene. He told LBC,
an almighty bang. It felt, sounded like a boulder had hit the floor. I noticed a forensic van at the end of the road and I thought, that doesn't sound good.
And we'll have more on that after this. The 8:15 LBC news headlines are read by Dominic Ellis.
Ahead of a Downing Street summit later, the Prime Minister has told LBC that social media firms must step up to protect children online or face stark consequences. Official figures show the UK economy grew by a faster than expected 0.5% in February, and it's emerged an average of three prisoners a week were freed by mistake in England and Wales over the past year. LBC weather, a mix of sunny spells and showers for large parts of the UK, some heavy downpours in the north, a high of 16 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. There are delays on the M1 southbound to Junction 11A at Dunstable. It's following an accident and one lane is closed. Very busy in Dollis Hill because Duddon Hill Lane is closed both ways after an accident. In Park Royal, Acton Lane is closed both ways because of an ongoing investigation and it's very busy in the area. The A40 remains closed both ways between the Northern Roundabout and the Marylebone Flyover because of the ongoing works. So definitely do expect delays again this morning, especially on the M4, which is very slow eastbound now up to the elevated section. On the underground, there are minor delays on the Bakerloo and Central lines, and also on the trains, Great Western Railway services are delayed between West Ealing and Greenford.
Call the Cabinet on LBC. Put your questions to the Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, this morning on Nick Ferrari at Breakfast.
It's the cinematic event of the year. Critics are saying a stunning, breathtaking triumph of savings. It's 2-for-1 cinema tickets from Compasa Market in cinemas all year.
That sounds like a great movie.
Sergey, it's no movie. It's 2-for-1 offer on cinema tickets.
Oh, yeah. I knew that.
Get 2-for-1 cinema tickets every Tuesday or Wednesday with the Compasa Market app. The simplest way to save.
When you take out a qualifying product to Compasa Market, one membership per year, participating cinemas, two standard tickets only, cheapest free. T's and C's apply.
Call call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Big motoring world are big on value. But what does that mean for you? Well, we price check our cars every day, so we can give you the best price. Guaranteed. In fact, 95% of our cars are priced below market value. Big Motoring World, we're big on value. See website for nearest store. Visit bigmotoringworld.co.uk or one of our stores for our price promise and terms and conditions.
With an Amex business card, Selena's earning points renovating her skin clinic and refreshing the builders.
14 coffees and 28 sugars, please.
And on new adjustable chairs for every room. And she can use the points to lie back and relax.
Don't put ice cream on your brother's head.
Well, sometimes. And that's because with an Amex business card, your points can go towards holidays and more.
Search Amex business card. Interest, fees and terms apply. Available to UK limited companies and limited liability partnerships. Signatories must be a director or member of the business. Subject to approval.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
This is what you're saying about the events in Epsom. This is from Vidal. Unfortunately, rapes and sexual assaults happen daily. Where are these white so-called patriotic folk out protesting daily if they care about female safety? Why are they only matching when they believe the perpetrators aren't white? The obvious answer is racism. Vidal, how do you know that everyone there was white? Have you studied the photographs? Because if you have, you'll see that they weren't, actually. Secondly, in many of those instances, or tragic and horrific as they are, I would hope that a suspect or suspects have been apprehended or the details have been released. In this instance, I would argue, put yourself in the place of some of those Epsom residents. They know this horrific and prolonged sexual attack of a young woman believed to be in her 20s in a church, a graveyard effectively, took place at the weekend, and they know nothing more. They don't know if the people are still on the run. They don't know if they're still living among them. They don't know any details. They don't know how many. And I remind you again, don't listen to what I say. I understand that. Listen, rather, to the National Police Chiefs Council. Interim guidance. Encourage police to share ethnicity and nationality of suspects as soon as is practically possible, close quotes, in the aftermath of the Southport killing and the unrest that caused in Merseyside and elsewhere. It is, I would suggest, quite obvious and understandable why people are concerned. We'll take calls on that in a moment. But something else, great concern would be, and we have to tread carefully now because there have been an arrest, but we seem to be an attempted arson or firebombing on a synagogue, the Finchley Reformed Synagogue in North London. Residents told LBC journalists,
the current climate, the Jewish community is under attack. I feel scared, and I'm scared for the Jewish people that come to the synagogue here.
It's not a surprise, it's just sad. My Jewish friends are really nervous.
I have never known the Jewish community so uneasy.
Well, someone who knows only too well the feelings of the Jewish community and has worked tirelessly in that area is John, now Lord Mann. He's a Labour peer, former long-serving Labour MP, and is now the UK government anti-Semitism czar. Lord Mann, you won't be surprised, I know you won't have to call you John. John, you won't be surprised to hear what those folk in North London are saying. We had to tread carefully now, as you'll be aware, because of charges, but we have the incident in Manchester, we have a fire attack on those ambulances in North London. What is the picture that's being painted here, John?
It's the cumulative impact of it on the Jewish community. I mean, any one incident is bad enough, and they have horrific consequences, as we've seen. But when there's attack after attack after attack, this is a whole section of our country under permanent siege. And that's not just how people feel. That's actually the reality of what's going on. There were two incidents the same day, not just what was happening at the Reform Synagogue in Finchley, but a man was apprehended and arrested with knives climbing over a wall at the Israeli embassy the same day. It's constant. And we've put more money in, and there needs to be more, by the way. But it's much more than that, getting on top of this problem, because there are so many people who feel entitled to go take their anger or their madness out on the Jewish community, either verbally or in violent ways.
John, can I get a bit political with you? We can almost hear the Prime Minister saying that he is appalled, he rejects his anti-Semitism, we stand shoulder to shoulder with our Jewish friends. Is that enough, these statements, John?
Of course it's not enough. Of course it's not enough. You know, I've two separate notes going into government today on changes that are needed. They're both quite sensitive, so I don't want to be wrong of me to publish details of them.
Can you give me a broad stroke, just a broad brush approach of what it is?
Oh, more precise areas, vulnerabilities that are not being properly addressed. There's a huge amount more that's there. But also that engagement, not just with the Jewish community, but other communities across the country. Are we as a country going to accept this? And are we going to tolerate those people who are the bystanders and the encouragers of it? And it's these encouragers of it, the people who seem to think, including a few politicians, that this kind of stuff's all right, won't call it out, won't do anything about it. And, you know, these people need to be challenged more effectively, more brutally. We've had enough of this. The country's had enough of it. And, you know, do we want the Jewish community in our country to leave the country or not? That's part of what I'm saying in my letters today, my advice notes to government. Do we want our Jewish community to leave the country? Because that's beginning to happen. And at any one time, that could suddenly happen in a very, very big way. And that's catastrophic for the country.
John, lastly, you say more money is required. Where? How should that money be spent?
We need to be looking beyond where it's been spent before into other parts of the Jewish way of life, into other Jewish facilities. One of the things we've been successful on is having very good security cameras. That's why people are getting arrested. We don't know if it's the right people, if they're guilty. The courts will decide that. But that's becoming the one, if you like, comfort's the wrong word, noticeable difference from 10, 20 years ago. We're able to capture these people really quickly, but we need more of that. This is relentless. So the government's role and the state's role has to be relentless in combating it. It has to be constant action as well as constant words.
Great for your time as ever. Great for your time as ever. John, thank you. Lord Mann, UK government's anti-Semitism is our long-serving former Labour MP and Labour peer. I just want to feature this, what is this, text. Sophie, shame on you. You reserve outrage for attacks against Jews here while never mentioning the hundreds of thousands killed by Israel. Sophie, that is exactly, respectfully to you, is where you go wrong. Do you honestly think that every Jewish person living in this country has full support for what Benjamin Netanyahu is doing? You've got to make the distinction between the actions of the Israeli, and this is, I appreciate, Sophie, and I don't want to be rude to you personally, but many people struggle with this. I don't know why, but they do. There is a distinction as broad as can be between the actions of the Israeli government in that country and in Gaza, their actions, from Jewish people trying to live in Finchley. Please, please see the distinction there. Let's talk about Epsom. I'm delighted to say that our caller is from Epsom, Lee. Lee in Epsom, how concerned are you that if you have a family, I don't know, or if you have a wife, whatever, we still don't know actually much detail on what happened on the weekend. Good morning.
Hi, Nick. Good morning.
Morning, sir.
I've got a young family here, and it is concerning that there's sort of acts of violence in the town centre. Mm. The police they've got to be given the space to do
of
the
course,
work that they need to
of
do,
course.
And
yeah, nothing to prohibit in any way. Of course, they're investigating, but we need to know if they're still on the loose, don't we?
Well, of course, the assumption must be that they're still on the loose.
Well, that's even more worrying.
Yeah, I mean, it's concerning, but what's also concerning is that so many police had to be drafted in to deal with a bunch of far-right agitators that came into the town from outside of Epsom to stir up trouble last night.
So they weren't residents. Were there some residents there?
Oh, of course. I mean, you'll get the people that they targeted it at a time when everybody's coming home from work.
Right.
So obviously people got caught up in this mob that came through on trains and in cars with their loudspeaker.
Right.
And you know, it was clearly orchestrated to sort of, I don't know, pander to certain far right sentiments about immigration, which I personally find abhorrent.
Well, of course, we all do, but also, Surrey police are ignoring the guidance from the National Police Chiefs Council to release, what is the expression, share the ethnicity and nationality of suspects as soon as is practically possible. They should be doing more, Lee. No?
But I think given the circumstances of what we know at the moment, is that it's going to be very, very difficult for the police to be able to pin down ethnicity or race or anything like that. So doesn't make any sense to put that out.
But how are they going to find them if they don't give us an idea of what we're looking for? Three white men in hooded tops, two black men in balaclavas. I don't know what we're talking about because the police won't tell us. How are we ever going to find them?
Well, we don't speculate. We let the police do their work and then look at all those cameras and see if they can determine stuff.
But they'll need the public to find them eventually. And obviously, the longer you leave it, the colder the trail goes. I don't see the wisdom in holding back. And neither does, what's it again, the National Police Chiefs Council. They don't either.
Yeah, well, I know you probably don't see the wisdom in it, but I think probably that the Surrey Police, I will trust them. They do a pretty good job.
All right. Well, let's hope they do a great job here. Let's hope they nick them as soon as is humanly possible. Lee, all safety to your family. Thank you. 8:29. A lot of people want to talk about anti-Semitism in the light of that alleged, we have to tread carefully now, charges, arson attack. Dan's in Potter's Bar. Dan, your reaction. Good morning.
Hi, Nick. I just heard that comment from that girl, Emma, about...
Sophie.
You know,
it was a text from Sophie.
My kids go to a Jewish primary school in North London, and I hear that kind of thing, and it really, really...
grinds your gears.
...aggravates me, because the idea that people in the Jewish community are pro-Israel policy is just the biggest myth. I think that needs to be dealt with sort of in an educational sort of capacity, because it's just nonsense. You know, I drop my kids off at school. You know, you get security concerns, you're worried that sort of something's going to happen. But the idea that, you know, you're automatically supportive of an Israeli policy is just disgusting.
Some of the most withering condemnation of Benjamin Netanyahu I've heard from my Jewish friends. So how is this laziness and ignorance to be addressed, Dan?
I think it needs to be educated to children. I think it needs to be educated to parents. I think it needs to be sort of first and forefront in a governmental policy to just, you know, make people understand that, you know, just because you're Jewish does not mean that you support another country's policy in a war.
Look after them, Dan. Thank you for that. Coming up after the news, the Prime Minister will today urge social media giants to do more to protect children who use their platforms. But, of course, that's the day after that vote did not go that way. Campaigner Ellen Roome believes she lost her son Jules attempting one of these online challenges. You may recall I've had the privilege of speaking with her. Here's a little of what she says.
We have proved with these cases in America and time again how much harmful material our children are seeing online and being fed through the algorithms. We need to change this. We need the government to step up and make differences.
And we'll hear from her again after this. 8:31, Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. The news is with Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer has told LBC the status quo of online safety for children still isn't good enough and will change under his direction. The fresh warning comes as bosses from the likes of YouTube and Snapchat have been summoned for talks at Downing Street today. Official figures show the UK economy grew by more than expected in February. GDP rose by 0.5% in the latest numbers recorded before the start of the Iran war. And data released by the Ministry of Defence shows an average of 3 prisoners a week were freed by mistake in England and Wales in the past year. 179 people were released in error between April 2025 and March this year. LBC weather, a mix of sunny spells and showers for large parts of the UK. Some heavy downpours in the north, a high of 16 degrees.
This is LBC.
Tony, what do you want to tell me? Good morning.
Scott has called from Glasgow. Hi, Scott.
Jane's in Camden first. Hi, Jane.
Our focus in the last few weeks has been on getting the Strait of Hormuz open because all the time it's not open for free navigation. That is impacting our economy and our energy bills. It's my job to protect the British public from that.
Hear every side of the story.
Starmer is going to have to get involved.
America has to get rid of Trump before he continues down this road of leading the world into a global economic crash.
You feel like asking much of a luxury now to eat health.
I'm almost in my 40s and I haven't ever had a break in war, in any of these living costs.
Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. LBC, leading Britain's conversation.
Need anything from Tesco? Like 2 for £8 on selected Tesco Finest ready meals, such as chicken tikka masala with pilau rice.
Club card accepted.
Because every little helps. Majority of larger stores ends 12th of April 2027. Club card or app required.
Okay, this kitchen table office situation isn't working anymore. My home office needs to feel less making do and more CEO of my own corner.
Sounds like a job for Wayfair.
Exactly. A proper desk to spread out on, a comfy ergonomic chair and a stylish lamp that makes video calls a little brighter.
With furniture and decor for every style and budget, Wayfair turns your home dreams into reality. So why wait to create the home you really love? Get it out of your head and into your home. Download the Wayfair app.
Tesco Insurance are driving down the cost of motoring with 10% off car insurance. Take out a car insurance policy before the 15th of May 2026 and you'll get 10% off with club card prices. We offer a range of cover options so you can choose the one that's right for you. Save 10% when you buy or renew a car policy with Tesco Insurance. Search Tesco Car Insurance and get a quote direct today. Club card required. Excludes add-ons. T's and C's apply.
I'm Will Buxton.
I'm Naomi Schiff.
I'm David Coulthard.
And I'm Joni Shaw.
This is Up to Speed. Available every Monday and Thursday on Global Player or wherever you get your podcasts.
Nick Ferrari at Breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's continue our conversation after this alleged arson attack in Finchley. Amanda is in Finchley. How close are you to the synagogue? Good morning.
Good morning. I'm about 10-minute walk. I went to nursery there.
Is it the synagogue? Yeah. Oh, it is, right.
Yeah, my family have always gone there for 37 years. I went to nursery there. I actually spoke to you just after October 7th, and I said to you I was really worried about being Jewish and the Jewish community after what Netanyahu then kind of did back. I was really worried about the repercussions to Jews around the world. I still am. I'm still too scared to put my mezuzah up on my door.
Yes. Just explain what that is. That's something you put by the front door.
Yeah, but it's just a little prayer inside a little case up on the door. I'm not religious at all. I don't keep Shabbat. I'm very traditional. I'm just so nervous. I think messages like what Sophie has sent in are incredibly alarming.
People joining us saying, why the outrage when you consider what Israel does in the Middle East? I'm just broadly shorting what Sophie said before the news. On you go, Amanda.
I'm totally against the war. I do not agree at all with either side. I think that, obviously, you know, you always hope for peace everywhere, but I don't agree with it. I'm one of the Jewish people that doesn't agree with it, but I do not agree, though, with people saying, well, you know, we can attack Jewish people in the UK because of what is happening in Israel.
So how is this to be addressed? Because it is both, it's an ignorance and intransigence as
correct.
Well.
Correct. So it's education. I think there is a huge lack of education in schools about other religions, I think the Holocaust is probably no longer really taught around the country really much anymore. I think there needs to be more conversations about multiculturalism, about inclusion, and that religion doesn't necessarily identify who you are and what you believe in terms of politics. And I think that is really hugely where the country goes wrong. I think that really misses probably where these people are going attacking. They're lacking education. They think that Jews and Israel are the same thing. They're not. Jewish people, Judaism is a religion, Israel is a country. It's kind of like saying, you know, all Christians are, I don't know, one thing, or all Muslims are the other, or all Buddhism. It doesn't matter where you come from or what your religion is. They don't have to be aligned. So I think there does need to be more education.
Amanda, I will leave it there, only to get others involved. Good luck. Stay safe, particularly relevant, as, of course, that is your synagogue. Amanda, thank you. Be well with your family. Derek's in Edgware. Derek, your reaction to this. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. First of all, I actually find it very abhorrent that Jewish people, and I'm Jewish, have to preempt their views on this by saying that they disagree with Netanyahu or they disagree with the wall. That in itself, of course, is very telling. But what I'd like to say is this. The other day, I dropped off one of my children in Bushy at Emmanuel College.
Is that the one about to be closed at the end of the year? School year, at the end of the school year?
Yes. Right. Emmanuel College is a very large private school,
yeah.
And it is surrounded by security and barbed wire and so forth. About 5 meters down the road is a private non-Jewish school, priory. Open doors, open gates, and so forth. You know, Jews make up 0.4% of this country.
Yes.
And at the end of the day, it's not up to Jews. What I find astounding is there seems to be no shame in this country, largely, amongst non-Jews, as to this kind of situation. I mean, non-Jews pass that lane on Bushy, and they see how Jewish schools have to have barbed wire.
It is barbed wire, then. It's not wire fencing. It's actual barbed wire.
Barbed wire fencing guards, okay.
I know there'd be fencing.
And literally 2 meters down the road is a non-Jewish school with open gates and so forth. Is there no shame? Is there absolutely no shame in this country that this is what has become of anti-Semitism?
Do you think, lastly, as Lord Mann was saying, it's effectively been normalised?
It's absolutely been normalised. It's become an accepted norm.
Derek, look after your child or your children. Of course, you've got to find new school as well now with that one closing. Thank you for your strong views. We will return to that. But attracting equally strong views, of course, is safety on social media. And that vote that we looked at yesterday, here's the moment. MPs in the House of Commons voted by a majority of 106 against a change to the bill that had been brought forward by Conservative Premier Lord Nash, with whom we spoke yesterday, proposed to restrict access to social media for the under-16s.
The ayes to the right were 256, the noes to the left 150, so the ayes have it, unlock.
Let's bring into the conversation Ellen Room, who's helped us on a number of occasions with this online safety campaign, who lost her teenage son to an online challenge, as it were, joins me now. So the vote goes against, and today we hear Sir Keir Starmer has told LBC he's determined to tackle this, and he's summoning tech bosses to Downing Street. What do you take from that development? Ellen, good morning again.
Good morning. I think convenient timing, isn't it? They weren't going to vote yesterday, we knew that. And then today, it's lined up, there's a meeting with all the tech bosses. Just convenient publicity stunt, quite frankly.
It is nothing more than a publicity stunt, Ellen.
Oh, absolutely. How many times do we have to keep talking about the subject? I mean, it goes on and on and on about a consultation and all the things that they keep saying, well, we need to look at doing more, actually do something. I just get so frustrated with this continuous talk of consultations and things, you know, like delaying the hours that a child can be on the site. They can still see harm within that time. I just get so frustrated. We need to step up and actually take some leadership and protect the children that are on the platforms.
You were with other grieving parents. I can see a photograph of you in one of the newspapers today, the Daily Mirror. You're outside the door of number 10. You're outside. Yeah. What needs to, in reality, be going on inside number 10, Ellen?
Well, you know, Keir Starmer hasn't had a meeting with us. He hasn't responded to our letters to him. And it's just, we're disregarded and ignored. And actually, as a group of bereaved parents, we're so frustrated. You know, our children are no longer here. But there are children being harmed. They may not necessarily all dying, but we do have children dying and we do have children being affected by these sites. Keir Starmer can't even bother to talk to us and hear our point of view.
I find that truly shocking. So the five parents, grieving parents I see in the mirror, he's not met with any of you.
There were 15 of us there yesterday.
I'm sorry, the photograph is of five. Okay. I apologise.
Sorry, no, you're only allowed six people at Downing Street to hand the letter in, but there are actually 15 of us, and he hasn't met us. No.
Not one of you?
Not in that group. No, not one of us have met him. No.
And yet he says, quotes, "When this comes with real risks, looking the other way is not an option. Parents rightly expect action, and fast. That's why we've already taken the powers needed to move quickly. Once consultation ends, I will take whatever steps necessary to keep children safe online." A last reaction from you for now, Ellen.
29 of us in our WhatsApp group. Not one of us have met him. Can't be bothered.
Ellen, I'm so sorry. For a multitude of reasons. I've already expressed my, obviously, commiserations on what happened to your lad. But that is shocking, really. Before I let you go, Ellen, I'm just thinking that someone who, if you believe the media reports, could be looking at taking over the Labour Party, could be a future Prime Minister, and certainly as Secretary of State for Health, which is another area touched by this. Wes Streeting, he's joining us later. Would you have a question for Mr. Streeting, Ellen?
I think obviously he's going to toe the party line, isn't he? And I don't want to back
that. I don't know. We'll try it anyway. Let's see. What would you ask?
I would say please do actually do something. This whole thing of just delaying it is not good enough. And maybe Wes Streeting would like a meeting with us, because I'm sure we've all got a point of view which we'd love to get across to somebody if somebody would give us the time to listen to our point of view. But this consultation with children who's 10 years old in the consultation can apply to it. They'll take their point of view, but they actually won't meet with us and actually hear our point of view when we have lost children and say, please, I've got no other children to protect. I've told you that before. This is about protecting the other children in the UK that are still alive. It's too late for my son.
Ellen, good luck with your campaigning. Again, full sympathy to you. Ellen Room, the online safety campaigner who lost her teenage son. Wes Streeting is with us in a little under an hour's time. 8:43. What you want to talk about are events in London with this suspected arson attack on a synagogue. Let's go to Manchester. Sarah is in Manchester. Sadly, another scene, of course, of horrific anti-Semitic attacks. Sarah, what do you want to tell me? Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Nick. I know that you are clear that targeting the Jewish community is wrong. I hear that. But I agree with Derek that the angle is wrong to say that not all Jews support Israel. It's irrelevant whether Jews support Israel or not.
But I'm... Sarah, I was only trying to explain that to a text.
I understand.
Okay, go on.
I understand.
It's the point I would make about America, right? You might not like Donald Trump, but that doesn't mean you despise every American.
Correct. And what I'm... exactly that point. And that's the trail that I'm going down. No Americans have been taxed. No marches are against America. No Russians have been attacked since the Russian war.
There have been some demos against Trump, but
Nothing like the scale.
Not the same regular
of what's
scale.
Gone on.
No.
And so the solution is not to throw more money at the CST or at security or anything like that. The solution is the government must now stop these marches for what they are, because they are clear anti-Semitism. And can I just say one thing?
Please.
I was in Israel when the war started. I had to come out via Egypt. I was there.
You were there on October 7?
No. This current one.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Right. Okay. Sorry.
Yeah. Yep. This current one.
Yep.
And I was there in a war. I had to go into shelters. Bombs were obviously exploding. I got back here as a Jew. I feel less safe here.
Hang on. Less safe here than you do in where? In Egypt?
In a war zone. In Israel, in a war zone. Less as a Jew, I feel less safe here.
Lastly, you say you don't need to send money to CST. I need to say that I sit on a board of CST.
I know.
I do think you need the money for the cameras and the cameras that might, of course, have played
100%. But the solution isn't to keep throwing the money at that and then for Keir Starmer saying I'm doing what I'm doing. You have to take this deeper now. Of course, the security, unfortunately, is needed. But we shouldn't have to be, as Derek said, we should not have to be hiding behind fences and barbed wire. Trust me, I go to work every day with security.
Mm. I'm sure you do. And children delivered where there are security guards behind high fences. And as Derek said, I didn't know there was barbed wire fences. I've been to Jewish school. I don't think I've seen very high chain link fences or whatever. Sarah, look after yourself. Thank you. We will stay with this conversation. But today marks 1 year from a historic court victory on the use of single-sex spaces, but still no action for organisations such as the NHS. Many say this confusion began back in March 2022, when I asked then Leader of the Opposition, Sir Keir Starmer, this question. A woman can have a penis.
Nick, I'm not...
A woman can have a penis.
I don't think that discussing this issue in this way helps anyone in the long run.
Consultation on online safety. Consultation on everything, a consultation on this. Do they ever make a consultation on defence? Do they ever make a decision on anything? More on that after this. We've got to 8:46 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Ahead of a Downing Street summit today, the Prime Minister has told LBC that social media companies need to step up to protect children or face stark consequences. Official figures show the UK economy grew by a faster than expected 0.5% in February. And it's emerged an average of 3 prisoners a week were freed by mistake in England and Wales over the past year. LBC weather, a mix of sunny spells and showers for large parts of the UK. Some heavy downpours in northern areas, a high of 16 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. So many problems on the motorways this morning. Firstly, in Bedfordshire, traffic is being held on the M1 southbound, just after Junction 11A at Dunstable. It's following an accident and there are queues on the approach. Then there are two problems on the M25. Firstly, on the Hertfordshire stretch, it's very busy anti-clockwise from Junction 25 at the A10 to 24 at Potter's Bar. That's where a van's broken down and two lanes have been closed. And then over on the Essex stretch, it's slow clockwise all the way from Junction 28 at the A12 to Junction 30 at the A13, where a lorry's broken down and two lanes are closed here as well. And there are delays on the M2 westbound to the Medway Bridge, and that's following an accident. It's slow for about 2 miles on the approach.
This is LBC.
At Tesco, we know that beans...
Mains Heinz.
And you love to ask.
Have you had yours?
All of you.
Love it.
Hate it.
And because...
I'm worth it.
When you need low prices on brands you love, like 150 grams of Heinz beans, 12-pack of Weetabix, 250 grams of Marmite, or 700 millilitres of L'Oreal Elvive Colour Protect Shampoo, look out for the Everyday Low Prices logo in-store and online. Tesco. Every little helps. Everyday low prices includes thousands of products across the majority of larger stores and online prices held until the 10th of May. Selected branded products only.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Hey, you! Yeah, you! What would you like from your investing app? 6% interest on your ISA, a free share of your choice, or no commission on stocks and ETFs up to €100,000 per month? With XTB, you get all of the above all in one app, the XTB app. Get your free share and start investing with XTB today. XTB, where your money works.
Capital at risk. Investment values can rise or fall. Limited free stock availability. 2% ISA rate boost for 90 days. New clients only. T's and C's apply.
Take Irish Ferries from Dover to Calais, where your pet travels in the pet lounge. You'd be barking not to. Irish Ferries. See travel differently.
Oh, you want weight loss advice?
Weight loss? Actually, what you want to do is...
I got my weight loss secret from my mother, who got it from her mother's
weight loss?
Or you could go to MedExpress. MedExpress. Healthcare without the noise. Go to medexpress.co.uk/weightloss.
Ali 60 milligram hard capsules contain orlistat for overweight adults with a BMI of 28 plus. Follow a reduced calorie, low fat diet. Always read the label.
At Lidl, we're giving you 50% off a fruit or veg item on your next shop. Just scan the Lidl Plus app at checkout, and when you scan, you'll be in with a chance to win your whole shop back. Open Lidl Plus and start saving today. Lidl, more to value. 18 plus GB residents, various prices available, subject to availability. Ends 30/5/26. Full T's and C's apply. See lidl.co.uk/lp-terms.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
10 minutes before nine is the time. Come back to that powerful conversation about anti-Semitism in the light of that alleged arson attack in North London. Now, today is a historic day. It's 1 year on from the victory on single-sex spaces. You remember that case that was borne by Scotland? Hundreds of public bodies still awaiting some kind of information or announcement from the government, which it would appear is still out to consultation, as is defence spending, as is potholes, as is the pub trade. More consultants than Guy's Hospital with this place. But the Conservatives say it is time for action. Let's turn to Claire Coutinho, Shadow Energy Secretary, Shadow Minister for Equalities, joining me now, who has a punchy piece in one of the newspapers, which is headlined. Now, of course, Claire Coutinho won't have written the headline, but hopefully it encapsulates what she says. What do we expect from a party whose leader can't define what a woman is? Which leads me neatly back to March 2022, when he was then leader of the opposition, and I asked him this. A woman can have a penis.
Nick, I'm not... I don't think we can conduct this debate with, you know...
Sorry, have I offended you in some
way? No, it's just...
A woman can have a penis.
I don't think that discussing this issue in this way helps anyone in the long run.
Conservative Claire Coutinho joins me now. Claire Coutinho, why would it appear the government is frit over this? Good morning.
Well, you just saw from that brilliant interview you did, they are the Labour government who have not been able to tell us what a woman is for years. And in fact, the Supreme Court ruling made it very clear, not that some of us needed to be told, I didn't, Kevin Badenoch certainly didn't, but they told us that a woman was a woman and a man was a man, biological sex is real. And for a year, what have we seen? Absolutely nothing. And I'm afraid I'm completely fed up by this, because I go, you know, week after week, I ask questions of the Secretary of State for Equalities. I say, what are you doing on any of these things? And we've just seen absolutely nothing. And this is not a trivial matter. This is about women being forced to undress in front of men. This is women who have to have their intimate care being done by biological men. This is women who are losing their places on sports podiums. They're losing their jobs. This is a serious matter, and we have to get on with it.
In your piece, you say that effectively they've been captured. Captured by whom or by what, Claire?
Well, you've seen these radical gender activists who've been pushing these lines, you know, a trans woman is a woman was the classic one, or that it's somehow exclusionary to have single-sex spaces. But that is not the case. And the Supreme Court ruling made things very clear. Look, we have to have provision for all people, but women are a special category. They have vulnerabilities, whether it's hospital wards or changing rooms. For the dignity and safety and privacy of women, you have to protect single-sex spaces. And the worst thing of all is the Labour Party claimed that they were going to follow the ruling, that they welcomed the ruling, and yet they have simply done nothing in this past year, and women have been left floundering because of it.
Lastly, if you would allow that we have a Prime Minister who seems enthralled to law books and legislation more than any I can recall, we have a clear Supreme Court ruling here, yet he and his senior colleagues, can I use the word defy, or certainly ignore it? It's a bizarre scenario.
It's absolutely mad. He says he cares about the law. His government departments are not following the law. The very least they could have done was made sure that the government departments that they run were following the Supreme Court ruling. They have not even done that. It's completely pathetic. And I'm afraid you've got a Prime Minister who hides behind the process, who says he loves the law. This is the law. He's not even following it in this case. It's just ridiculous, frankly.
Final sentence. What should happen now?
They need to get on with it. Publish the guidance. They've had it for 7 months. Be clear with people that they have to follow the law, and if not, make it very clear that they will act.
Claire Coutinho, thanks as ever for your time. Your Shadow Energy Secretary and Shadow Minister for Equalities. Just to clarify, so that ruling was 12 months ago, then subsequent advice was put together 7 months, as Claire Coutinho just referenced, and that's been sitting on the desk of Bridget Phillipson while we wait. Possibly something for Wes Streeting. He's with us in just over half an hour's time. 6 minutes. No, I'm so sorry. 5 minutes now. 5 minutes before nine. We are talking about the scourge of anti-Semitism normalised, as one caller, Derek, was saying, delivering his children to school with behind barbed wire. I mean, many schools have fences. I went to a school that had fencing, or a fence, or fences, I suppose, but not barbed wire. John's in Golders Green. John, your reaction. Good morning.
Hi, Nick. Good morning.
Hello,
my take is quite simple, really. My comments don't just apply to Jews. They would apply to any anti-Muslim comments as well.
Right.
In Germany, if you say anything anti-Muslim or anti-Semitism in comments, you're looking at 5 years in prison, and I don't think that's anywhere near enough. If the government wants to stop this, and they need to send a very strong signal that any racially motivated comments, whether they're anti-Muslim or anti-Semitic, is punishable by 10 years in prison. And if there's a crime associated with it, you're looking at 20 years to life. So people need to understand...
I think, John, you might be going a little extreme to suggest a life term for this.
I said 20 years to life.
Well, that...
All right.
What, 20 years to
I don't
life?
Know what
yeah.
the, I don't know what the penalty is just for arson alone.
Well, we don't know if it is arson. But anyway,
The sentences need to be accumulated. That way, people will understand that if they get caught, and these people are being caught, whether they're wearing balaclavas or not, they are going to go away to prison for a very long time. A very long time.
I agree with that. Happy with that. But I don't know that I'd want to live in a kind of where, in some instances, John, these are misguided young people. And one of the joys of being young, being a student, is that you're exploring all sorts of ideas and you might get swept up with a particular anti-Jewish view, anti-Muslim view, whatever it might be, anti-whatever faith you like, anti-Catholic view. The idea then that you could be in jail for 10 or 20 years, I can't hold with that. But a stronger line from this government, yes, much as we were saying of digital, there's a theme linking this, isn't there? There really is. When it comes to the trans guidance, waiting more consultation, when it comes to actual action, anti-Semitism, waiting, of course, for more guidance. When it comes to defence, the conversation yesterday, no, it's out for a review. As I say often, more reviews than Stockley Park, this lot. Should we go to Epsom? Gary. Gary, how much concern is there on the streets of Epsom? Was a demonstration hijacked yesterday? How would you perceive it? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. So, I've lived in Epsom for over 30 years. It's a busy show, so obviously I've held on for a little while. When I originally rang in, I was shaking with anger and fuming with the call you had from a chap called Lee.
Yes, he says that effectively people in Epsom are not bothered and they fear there might be a degree of racism at play here.
Well, you know, it's an outrageous claim to make. So last night, I went there before I went to work. I've spoke to you before. I worked nights. Went there before. There was children, women. I've lived in Epsom for 30 years. My beautiful daughter-in-law is in her late 20s. And I've got a three-year-old grandson. They live in Epsom town centre.
Lovely, yeah.
And the problem is, right, you know, if that chap was so fearful about what he calls the far right getting a voice, when it wasn't, it was families, friends.
Oh, was it?
Just making
okay.
a very okay. peace. Yeah, there was a right idiot got on top of a police van. He got booed down. Right,
right.
The crowd was singing Sweet Caroline. We had riot police in front of us, okay, as if there was some sort of mob. And it was kids in prams, kids in... It was terrible. But all I say is, right, we know what's happened. That's the problem on social media.
Well, be careful. I want to hear what you say, but obviously you can't say anything that might identify anybody.
No, I'm not going to identify. I'm not going to identify anybody because I don't work for the police.
No.
But they know, and they're not identifying, as you've touched on earlier on, and that is what is fueling this anger that will lead to people that apparently have got abhorrent behaviour and right-wing views. But if you're not going to support the people in the communities and you're going to have two-tier policing and a young girl, why are we not... Someone wants to ring up about right-wing rather than about the poor young lady who's had her life destroyed, her family that, you know, are absolutely under all sorts of terrible strain now because, you know, these people are at large.
Well, that's not the whole point. That's a crucial point. Gary, look after your family. I'm only finishing. We'll go a minute late to the news. Gary, thank you. You're in Epsom. Ian's in Epsom. Ian, your take on events there yesterday. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Nick. I think the previous call sort of stole my thunder a bit. I was calling in. I'm from Epsom, lived here for 21 years.
Right.
And listening to Lee just boiled my blood. He's just typical of some of the bleeding heart liberals that we have in this borough, and epitomised by our MP, unfortunately. But it's...
What can I ask you, what needs to happen now so we take the sting or the heat out of this, Ian?
The police need to give us more information. They need to follow their own guidance. They should...
Well, the guidance of the National Police Chiefs Council. Yep, on you go. Yep.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly. They should be doing that. And it's been 5 days now, and nothing. All they're saying is they're just carrying on with their inquiries, and being supported by the MP.
And it's not good enough. Ian, you got your point across. I must go there. The local MP is Helen Maguire. She's the Liberal Democrat MP. If she or any of her team are listening, we'd welcome a call in just as soon as you can. Thank you. But the music means we move on. And we'll move on, actually, by coming back just a few minutes. This so-called betrayal of women, 12 months on from that historic ruling. Plus, how heating oil thieves now are at work as Iran sees the prices soar. And Wes Streeting, Health Secretary, told me in November...
When you say, I don't want to be out on strike today, yes, you do, because you have made that choice.
That was when he was with me in November during a previous wave of resident doctor strikes, and one of those resident doctors phoned in to say he didn't want to take the action. You heard Mr. Streeting's reaction then. All these months on, the strikes have continued. Wes Streeting joins us later in the next hour, but the 9 o'clock news on LBC is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the Prime Minister has told LBC the status quo of online safety for children isn't good enough and will change under his direction. The fresh warning comes as social media executives have been summoned for talks at Downing Street today. It comes midway through the government's consultation on an Australia-style social media ban for under-16s. Ravi Govinda is from the charity the NSPCC and has told LBC News change is needed.
Time is up. I mean, clearly there is huge public outcry at the way tech companies have neglected their duty of care to children. Children and families have been left to protect themselves online, and that's unacceptable. We have the Online Safety Act, and we haven't seen tech companies do enough to prove that they are properly assessing the risks on their sites and putting the mitigations in place.
The Prime Minister has written exclusively for LBC ahead of today's summit. You can read more on the LBC app. The United States says it's holding indirect talks with Iran about resuming peace negotiations in Pakistan in the next few days. White House officials have also expressed optimism about extending the ceasefire beyond next Wednesday. Surrey police has warned disorder won't be tolerated after protesters gathered in Epsom to protest an alleged rape in the town. A woman in her 20s reported that she'd been attacked outside a church in the early hours of Saturday morning. Officials say a group congregated in the town yesterday demanding answers from police. Officers say they're reviewing CCTV footage but don't yet have enough information to release descriptions of the potential suspects. The UK economy grew by 0.5% in February, according to official figures released this morning. A previous estimate of no growth in January has also been revised up to 0.1%. The data doesn't show the impact of the Iran war, which started on the last day of February. Former Conservative Chancellor Sir Jeremy Hunt told Nick this morning the conflict can present opportunities for the government to boost growth.
Our nuclear power costs double the price of French nuclear power. We have to switch off half the electricity generated from our enormous wind farms off the North Sea because the national grid can't absorb the electricity. We still have to pay for it, but we don't get it. Those are the things that could actually bring down our energy bills, and I think that's the big thing now.
Hunt claimed around 1 in 10 online pharmacies have had their websites cloned by platforms selling fake weight loss jabs. The National Pharmacy Association has urged people to be wary of prices that seem too good to be true. It's also calling on the Health Secretary for stronger safeguards to protect patients. And Wes Streeting will join Nick Ferrari shortly live to take your calls on LBC's Call the Cabinet. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 24 at 10,584. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.14. LBC weather, a mix of sunny spells and showers for large parts of the UK. Some heavy downpours in the north, a high of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Don't know what it's like in your house, but keeping everyone entertained can be a nightmare. Take the pressure off with EE's award-winning TV and full-fibre broadband. With Netflix Now, TNT Sport and more. And get their most powerful Wi-Fi 7 as standard, so everyone can stream their films, series and sport at the same time. Switch to EE TV and broadband today. New BT Group customers only. 62% UK availability. Terms apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 5 minutes after nine, Thursday, April the 16th. From our schools, from our hospitals, to our councils, to our changing rooms in the shops, it affects everybody, this so-called trans guidance. A year ago, historic court victory on so-called single-sex spaces, hundreds of public bodies still choosing to ignore it. And the government sitting on information, that was 12 months ago. 7 months ago, there was more advice from the Equality and Human Rights Commission. Still no action. We'll talk about the impact of that. The impact of the Iran conflict now on heating oil.
As the price of heating oil surges, we've learned how thieves are leaving even the most vulnerable freezing in their homes. I'm LBC's Alan Zizinski with the story.
And coming up later in the hour, he'll be with us around 9:30, this man.
We finally got the NHS going in the right direction. Lowest waiting list in 3 years, fastest ambulance response times in half a decade. Under Labour, the NHS is improving.
Health Secretary Wes Streeting, he says, under Labour, the NHS is improving. The last contact you had with it, with them, with your doctors, with your hospital, with your clinicians, would you agree? What would you want to when Wes says that? What say you? That's later in the hour.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 60 60973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Today marks 12 months. 12 months and an anniversary that raises serious questions for this government. It's a year since the Supreme Court's landmark ruling that under equality law, being a woman is defined by a biological sex. The judgment, 88 pages in length, was welcome relief from the pro-transgender dogma that had threatened to suffocate national debate in this country during recent years, said campaigners at the time. After that, subsequently, there was more advice given from the Equality and Human Rights Commission, or EHRC, on how to enforce the ruling. That arrived in September. Now, for many campaigners, it all dates back to this interview, very briefly, play it again, March 2022, when he, Sir Keir Starmer, was leader of the opposition. And I asked, a woman can have a penis?
Nick, I'm not... I don't think we can conduct this debate with... You know,
sorry, I get this. Offended you in some
way? No, it's just I just
a woman can have a penis.
I don't think that discussing this issue in this way helps anyone in the long run.
And nearly 4 years to the day, we still don't really have any definitive view. Now, if you were listening before the news, I was speaking with Conservative Shadow Energy Secretary, Shadow Minister of Equalities Claire Coutinho, about the government's failure to publish that trans guidance, and I asked what did she think lay behind the delay.
You just saw from that brilliant interview you did. They are the Labour government who have not been able to tell us what a woman is for years. And in fact, the Supreme Court ruling made it very clear, not that some of us needed to be told. I didn't. Kevin Badenoch certainly didn't. But they told us that a woman was a woman and a man was a man. Biological sex is real. And for a year, what have we seen? Absolutely nothing. And I'm afraid I'm completely fed up by this because I go, you know, week after week, I ask questions of the Secretary of State for Equalities. I say, what are you doing on any of these things? And we've just seen absolutely nothing. And this is not a trivial matter. This is about women being forced to undress in front of men. This is women who have to have their intimate care being done by biological men. This is women who are losing their places on sports podiums. They're losing their jobs. This is a serious matter and we have to get on with it.
In your piece, you say that effectively they've been captured. Captured by whom or by what, Claire?
Well, you've seen these radical gender activists who've been pushing these lines, you know, a trans woman is a woman was the classic one, or that it's somehow exclusionary to have single-sex spaces. But that is not the case. And the Supreme Court ruling made things very clear. Look, we have to have provision for all people, but women are a special category. They have vulnerabilities, whether it's hospital wards or changing rooms. For the dignity and safety and privacy of women, you have to protect single-sex spaces. And the worst thing of all is the Labour Party claimed that they were going to follow the ruling, that they welcomed the ruling, and yet they have simply done nothing in this past year, and women have been left floundering because of it.
Lastly, if you would allow that we have a Prime Minister who seems enthralled to law books and legislation more than any I can recall, we have a clear Supreme Court ruling here, yet he and his senior colleagues, can I use the word defy, or certainly ignore it? It's a bizarre scenario.
It's absolutely mad. He says he cares about the law. His government departments are not following the law. The very least they could have done was made sure that the government departments that they run were following the Supreme Court ruling. They have not even done that. It's completely pathetic. And I'm afraid you've got a Prime Minister who hides behind the process, who says he loves the law. This is the law. He's not even following it in this case. It's just ridiculous, frankly.
Final sentence. What should happen now?
They need to get on with it. Publish the guidance. They've had it for 7 months. Be clear with people that they have to follow the law. And if not, make it very clear that they will act.
Claire Coutinho, let's put some of those points to Steph Richards, who's a founder of Translucent, a transgender advocacy organisation, regularly helps us with matters as these. Good to have you on again. So it's, in the view of Claire Coutinho, the government action is pathetic, they're hiding, and it's a betrayal. Your reaction, if you would, Steph. Morning to you.
Yeah, morning. Thank you so much for having me on. Wow. Can I first of all answer the bit? Can a trans woman have a penis? I had my lower surgery on the 2nd of July 2019. My bits was last seen floating off the Isle of Wight. So if Claire wants to swap genitals or have a look at my genitals, she's more than welcome.
Right.
And then in regards to this Labour government...
I've never heard anything like that before in all the years I've been doing radio. On you go, Steph.
Well, there you go, Nick. You know you love having me on.
I do. I love you very much.
So, in regards and in regards to this Labour government, can I say that, in my opinion, and indeed many others, we feel that the Labour government has absolutely been incredibly trans-hostile since they've come into...
Really? Goodness, why so, Steph?
Well, let's go back some years ago. 2.5 years ago, I was appointed CEO of an endometriosis charity. My background was some 20 years in medical research. Mm-hmm. Last year, I started a project, which was now finished, with 110 references on why there's not enough funding in regards to endometriosis, and a medical condition that affects 1.6 million women in this country. Mm. I am a Labour Party member. I have been a women's officer at my CLP. I have been to the National Women's Conference, Labour's National Women's Conference, as a delegate. I have been on an all-women shortlist. And believe it or not, I am banned from going to that conference. I am not allowed to go to that conference.
Banned by whom or by what?
The Labour Party.
The Labour Party have banned you from attending this conference?
Because I'm a trans woman. That's the effect of this government. So please...
Well, they're not helping either side here, are they, Steph? Uniquely, they're managing to offend both sides of the coin here.
They are absolutely offended me. I'm now launched a legal case against the Labour Party. I'm looking to get something like £16,000 in a crowd justice campaign.
Right.
I fight for women. I'm an award-winning feminist, for God's sake.
Right.
And do I agree with single-sex basis? Of course I do. But it depends on every case is different. It's a really complex issue, and I think in fairness to the government, and I don't want to be particularly... complimentary, even though I'm a Labour Party member. It's a highly complex issue, because what you're getting, Claire was there talking about sex, but there's another protected characteristic called gender reassignment. Mm-hmm. And you've got a clash of rights there. And in those circumstances, to weigh it all up, then you've got to start talking about the Human Rights Act. Then you've got to start looking at their obligations in or around the Gender Recognition Act. This really is very, very difficult to balance. And I'm sure this is all going to end up in Strasbourg. So I think what the Labour government really ought to be doing is actually opening up a full inquiry on the whole issue. Because, frankly, I'm fed up of talking about trans issues. I want to be talking about the real issues that's out there that's affecting women.
Lastly, others have decided to leave the Labour Party as a result of the party's stance on this. You've mentioned you've referenced your membership at least on two occasions. Would you ever consider leaving the Labour Party?
I'm a socialist. I fight from inside.
Right.
I appreciate other parties have got far better policies than the Labour Party. I'm going to change the party from inside, and that's my object.
That's your task as you see it. Steph, thank you very much. Steph Richards, founder of Translucent. Good to hear you on again. Transgender advocacy organisation. I need to tell you, the Labour Party is yet to issue a full response to her claim that she was blocked from the conference. But over to the delay. We can certainly talk about that. It's a High Court ruling. It's a Prime Minister who loves the law, but it would appear not on this occasion. Also after the news.
As the price of heating oil surges, we've learned how thieves are leaving even the most vulnerable freezing in their homes. I'm LBC's Alan Szyszynski with the story.
Yes, cold comfort in every sense of the word. It's 9:15, LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Ahead of a Downing Street summit today, the Prime Minister has told LBC that social media companies need to step up to protect children or face stark consequences. Official figures show the UK economy grew by a faster-than-expected 0.5% in February, and it's emerged an average of 3 prisoners a week were freed by mistake in England and Wales over the past year. LBC weather, a mix of sunny spells and showers for large parts of the UK, some heavy downpours in northern areas, a high of 16 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M1 traffic was being held southbound at Junction 11A at Dunstable. That traffic's now been released, but it's still very slow. But unfortunately, the M2 traffic's now being held westbound at the Medway Bridge after that accident, and there are queues of about 3 miles on the approach. Traffic's also being held on the M23 northbound at the M25 junction. A car's broken down, and there are queues on the approach. The M25's very slow clockwise from Junction 28 at the A12 to Junction 30 at the A13. That's where a lorry's broken down and two lanes are closed. Richmond Bridge remains closed both ways after an accident, and that's causing severe delays. And in Dollis Hill, Duddon Hill Lane is closed both ways after an accident.
Call the Cabinet on LBC. Put your questions to the Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, this morning on Nick Ferrari at Breakfast.
Switch to Plusnet's award-winning full fibre from just £22.99 a month. Our sweet deal gets you fast and reliable broadband with no activation fee. With speeds up to 900 megabits. Ooh, feels like a sugar rush. Full fibre that's full of value. That's a plus. Offer ends 6th of May.
24 months, £26.99 from the 31st of March 2027. £30.99 from the 31st of March 2028. New customers only. 62% UK availability. Terms apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
Selling your car can be super simple. If you choose We Buy Any Car. Now in their 20th year, they're on average 11 minutes away. So help is never far. If only they could make finding a good driving song simpler. No. No. Oh, definitely not. We Buy Any Car. Selling made simple. To sell your car today, enter your reg number now at webuyanycar.com.
What's the best present you ever got for your birthday? I bet it wasn't as life-changing as £1 million. Every week with the birthday draw, there's £1 million to be won. And you can enter from as little as £1 or via post. Enter by midnight on Sunday and your special day could win you £1 million. Visit thebirthdaydraw.com. Is it your lucky day? From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only, no purchase necessary.
With an Amex business card, Selena's earning points renovating her skin clinic and refreshing the builders.
14 coffees and 28 sugars, please.
And on new adjustable chairs for every room. And she can use the points to lie back and relax.
Don't put ice cream on your brother's head.
Well, sometimes. And that's because with an Amex business card, your points can go towards holidays and more.
Search Amex business card. Interest, fees and terms apply. Available to UK limited companies and limited liability partnerships. Signatories must be a director or member of the business. Subject to approval.
Nick Ferrari at Breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's pick up on what is this extraordinary delay. 12 months to the day since the Supreme Court ruling, 7 months of additional guidance, nothing from the government. Monica in Richmond. Monica, your reaction to that. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. I'd just like to say a few comments in response to Steph's call that you just had. She mentioned, Steph mentioned that they had lower surgery. I just want to make clear to your listeners that a man with a castrated man is still a man. They're not any type of woman. They have an open wound between their legs. Right. So that just because someone has lower surgery doesn't make them a woman.
But I think if they have the so-called recognition certificate, they are, for legal purposes, then deemed to be a woman, aren't they, Monica?
It's a legal fiction.
You're very much, but I do just have to put the balance. You called it a legal fiction. They would call it a GRC, a gender recognition certificate.
The Supreme Court ruling overrides that GRC, so they are still not entitled to women's spaces.
Yes, what the Supreme Court ruling specified that a woman in the Equality Act refers to a biological sex. Is it, if we just go back briefly to that ruling a year ago?
Yep.
And, of course, it's the implement or the failure to act on that guidance. What do you think the government needs to do in this area, Monica?
I think they, first of all, before they do anything, they have to make sure that all civil servants are abiding by it. I can tell you for sure that lots of departments have completely ignored it because they're pretending that it's all too complicated. The reality is that they're too afraid of trans activists just like Steph.
why would it, if we talk more broadly about that campaigners, why would it appear, if you're right, why would it appear that campaigners have such a chokehold on this debate, would you think?
Because, I'm afraid I hold the media quite responsible for it as well. It's been framed around being kind. We have to be kind to people like Steph.
We have to be kind to everybody, don't we? It's good to be kind to people, isn't it?
Of course we do. Sometimes we have to say no to people. Like Steph, we have to say no. He shouldn't be in charge of women's health charities.
I'm going to refer to her as she. If she has the background in medical knowledge and medical research, and she's the best person for the job, why can't Steph have that job?
Do you really think? Isn't it?
Well, I'm not familiar with. I don't do medical research, Monica. So I don't. I don't know anything about. Well, I had a person in my life who had endometriosis, but I don't know anything about it. I've not had it.
It's all just one big men's entitlement, isn't it? Of all the women that suffer from this, a man is the best person for the job. A man posing in women's clothes is better than the other.
I'm probably, because I hear your views, but I know Steph. I mean, I don't know intimately, I don't know her well, but she's a tremendous contributor to this programme. I don't want to hear this being too offensive by someone who's not here to defend herself, but Monica, I take on board the points you make. Thank you, Monica. Hannah's in Liverpool. Hannah, what would you say to this tricky debate?
Hi, Nick. Where to start? Let's start. I'm sorry, I'm quite nervous as well.
Oh, please don't be nervous.
I apologise if my voice cracked as well. I think you opened the debate by using the phrase something like that women have been betrayed by the government.
Well, that's Claire Coutinho's words, yes.
I think the opposite is quite true in that cis women have not been impacted at all. I don't think Monica's life has been ruined in the past 12 months.
Well, it only because if she wanted somewhere a single-sex space, of course.
No, but nothing has changed for Monica in the past 12 months. Her life has not been ruined by a Supreme Court ruling.
We don't know whether she's received NHS treatment and not been happy with not having to perhaps get undressed under a bylaw. We don't know.
Okay, so if I can give you an example of how the impact on me. So, and we're still waiting for the text, the guidance, as it were. But from excluding myself in fear of what is to come, I've withdrawn an application to join the ambulance service.
Right.
Because
why?
I'm fearful of the restrictions that will be placed on me in the workplace.
Such as what?
Access to bathrooms and changing rooms, as you have alluded to. As a woman over 50, I am regularly required to go for a breast examination.
Right.
I am not doing that because currently, and quite rightly, breast examinations can only be performed by women on women.
Right.
But you're telling me, and Monica is telling me, that I am not a woman. Yeah, I have breasts. I'm a woman over 50. I need a breast examination. But I am fearful about going into that.
What did the Supreme Court ruling mean to you, lastly, Hannah?
So I'm fearful about going into that single-sex space, a breast examination room, for fear of being outed, being excluded, being attacked verbally.
You don't think the legal perspective has to be adhered to then? No?
Sorry?
You don't think the legal ruling should be respected and adhered to?
No, so I think what has happened, and Monica referred to the Gender Recognition Act as a legal fiction. So
she's referring to a Supreme Court ruling. You can't call that fiction.
Okay, no, let me finish, right? Let me get my point across.
Briefly, forward.
She has referred to the Gender Recognition Act as a legal fiction because it does not fit her narrative.
No, that's not actually fair. She's referring to a Supreme Court ruling a year to the day that actually stated under the Equality Act it refers to biological women and men and not to self-identification or a GRC, a gender recognition certificate. That's what she was referring to. Hannah, I must leave it there for time reasons. I wish you well. Thank you, because we must feature other stories before the Health Secretary arrives. And LVC has learned of a surge in heating oil thefts since the Iran war sent prices skyrocketing, one victim of whom is a 102-year-old woman. Rural churches, charities and hotels rely on it for warmth and hot water have also been targeted, with half a dozen police forces issuing alerts to more than 7 million people across rural Britain to protect their fuel. LBC's correspondent Alan Zizinski reports from Aberdeenshire.
There's my tank there. The lid had been rived open. It was still hanging on the padlock. And then we went and checked the tank and then there was basically nothing left.
David Mowat is one of the latest victims in what's been a fortnight of theft here, where we have seen thousands of litres of heating oil stolen from outside homes.
It was half a tank, probably about 600 litres, maybe left is 50, so 500.
How much is that worth?
Well, I had to get it replaced on Monday and it was 137 a litre. When I filled it back in January, I was 68 pence a litre. I think the way they go about it is they've got a transit van and they've got a 1,000-litre IBC tank within the van and they basically just run a pipe out and pump it out of your tank into theirs. Jeez. And disappear.
And these spates of nighttime raids are happening across rural Britain, including in Yorkshire, where the Inn Gemma Runs has been targeted.
We literally realised we had no hot water. Then, obviously, after it had been stolen, we had to have it refilled, and it was about tripled in price. It was about £900. There'd been a theft in the next village the same night, and the garage on the A64, prices have gone through the roof, so the thieves are going to try and get what they can, I guess, wherever they can.
And that's true in Wales as well, where we've learned of one case where an 102-year-old woman was left without the oil needed to heat her home. And in Sussex, Councillor Keith Brandon was devastated to discover the memorial hall he helps to run, which commemorates the lives of fallen British soldiers, had also been drained of its oil.
It was gutting. We have 3 members of staff. The rest of us are all volunteers. You've worked your bones off trying to make the hall as good as it can be for the community. And then something like that happens and it just stops you dead in your tracks.
In total, police forces covering some 7 million people are now actively warning them about incidents in their areas, urging them to install CCTV and watch out for crime gangs trying to move on this stolen oil on the black market. Mo Metcalf-Fisher from the Countryside Alliance says it's left every rural community on high alert.
All is liquid gold right now, and there's a huge demand for it, and criminal gangs are targeting rural people. We'll continue from our end at the Countryside Alliance, but I know other rural organisations, in calling on the government to treat the threat and rural damage of rural crime seriously.
Mo Metcalf-Fisher from the Countryside Alliance, concluding Alan Zizinski's report. Health Secretary Wes Streeting taking your calls after the 9:30 news on LBC.
Sir Keir Starmer's told LBC social media firms need to step up and take responsibility to protect children online. The warning comes as executives from several companies have been summoned for talks at Downing Street today. The UK economy grew by 0.5% in February, according to official figures. The data doesn't show the impact of the Iran war, which started on the last day of February. And an average of 3 prisoners a week were freed by mistake in England and Wales over the past year. Ministry of Justice data suggests that 179 inmates were released in error between April 2025 and March this year. LBC weather, a mix of sunshine and showers for most, some heavy downpours in the north, a high of 16 degrees.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Put your questions to the Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, now. Call 0345 6060 973.
Call the Cabinet exclusively here on LBC 9.30 on Thursday, April the 16th, and Health Secretary Wes Streeting is with me, the man who admitted that turning around the NHS was a bit like turning around an oil tanker. But I think news has dropped this very minute that shows they're heading to a little bit of clear blue water. Wes Streeting, thank you for coming to the studio. What's the news you've got? What are the figures you can tell us? Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning. Yes, so the latest NHS stats are out, and they are all showing progress in the right direction. So waiting lists have fallen again. We're now at the lowest level in 3 years. Over almost 750,000 more patients were seen on time in A&E, and 12-hour waits are falling. Ambulances are arriving more than 5 minutes faster to heart attack and stroke victims, and a record number of patients received an all clear or a cancer diagnosis within the 28 days they're supposed to, which as a cancer survivor myself means a lot to me personally. And so this is all progress in the right direction. I think that when I look at the, you know, the sort of the state of the NHS today, and I think about the sort of feedback I get, obviously, local elections are on at the moment. I've been not just in my patch, but around the country talking to people now. Two things are true at the same time. There'll be people listening thinking, yeah, it's moving in the right direction. That was my experience. They'll have a story to tell. That will mean a lot to them. They'll be saying, well done. And there'll be other people shouting on the radio saying, what the bloody hell is this guy talking about? I've had a really awful experience. And both of those things are true. The NHS is moving in the right direction. It's on the road to recovery. But there's a lot more to do. And for me, the next year is about putting my foot down on the accelerator.
Where might we be if you hadn't had the issue of resident doctors' strikes, Mr. Streeting?
Oh, well, this is a very live question, because we won't know whether I've hit my waiting times target until we get the data next month. So we're aiming to get 65% of patients seen within 18 weeks by the end of March 2026. But there's a 2-month lag on the data publication. Now, we're currently around 63%. So I know, therefore, that we are within touching distance of either just hitting it or just missing it.
So what is the impact of the resident
doctor? If we hadn't had those strikes, I'd probably be sat here, Nick, on the basis of the published numbers saying we've done it a bit early. I suspect that when I'm back, when the data comes out, I will either be saying we've just hit it, what a miracle, given the strikes, or I would have hit it but for those strikes, which is, I think, captures really my frustration about where we are with the resident doctor strikes, because we are making progress in spite of strikes.
So are there any targets you've missed?
We could make more progress more quickly. Yes. So on to the targets that I can tell you where we are at, and this is where you really will hear my frustration come through. So we needed to get an average of a 30-minute response time for those ambulances arriving for heart attack and stroke victims. Mm-hmm. We needed an average of 30 minutes. We came in at 30 minutes oh. and 4 seconds. And let me tell you, the other week I was driving down Morney Road in Romford. I had an ambulance coming towards me on my side of the road. You have never seen someone move more quickly out of the way of an ambulance, because I know that literally every second counts. So,
four seconds.
So we were breathtakingly close there on the 12-hour standard. So this is where we need to reduce the number of patients waiting over 12 hours for admission or discharge from an A&E department to 10% or less of the time. We missed that by 0.01 percentage points. So we came in at 10.01, which I have to say, like, and then on the 4-hour waits in A&E, we needed to do that. So 78% of people admitted, transferred or discharged within 4 hours in A&E by the end of March. That needed to come in at 78%. We missed that by 0.9 percentage points. So all within touching distance. But you know me, right. Nick, I'm yes. very competitive. And I'm frustrated, because right. I wanted to kind of come in ahead. But the fact is, I mean, regardless of all of that, and I definitely want to give credit to the staff here, we have nonetheless got the best ambulance response times we've seen in half a decade, waiting lists at the lowest levels in 3 years, and the best A&E performance in four. Right. So at least the NHS is finally moving in the right direction. And at least with these targets, which were stretching, and loads of think tanks saying, oh, you're not going to hit that.
Okay.
Well, we came so close. And I do think the staff deserve credit for that, even if people can rightly, you know, critique me as a politician and ask me questions about the time.
And that's what's going to happen now. Put your headphones on, if you would. And yep. By the way, I noticed, do you want a drink of any sort? Let me hand you this can. Do you want to walk? Because I realise we haven't given you
a coffee. I need a whiskey after missing by 4 seconds. But
I haven't got that, but I can give you a can of fizzy water. I assure you that is not a can of beer that the Health Secretary, he would never allow himself beer of quality almost at any time of day. David in Hampstead. David, you're on to Wes Streeting. Go ahead, David. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Great show. Hi, Wes.
Morning.
So the question is, with this report that came out by the Telegraph a little while ago about people having appointments cancelled in order to bring down waiting lists, is something that's happened to family and friends of mine, actually, where appointments have been cancelled for literally no reason and they've just had to rebook. So the question really is, when you talk about, which obviously you do a lot, about waiting lists coming down on the NHS, number one, does that include cancellations? Do you count cancellations as people coming off the waiting list, bring waiting list down, even though they have to rebook? And number two, if you do count that, can you please supply the data without cancellations?
This is the report in the Telegraph suggesting more than 250,000 patients were removed from those lists in January, 15% more than the month before. Is that the reality behind those figures you were just lauding, Health Secretary?
No, so there are three separate things. There may be people whose appointments, tests, scans, operations, procedures need to be rearranged for operational reasons, including strike action. Now, the way in which we calculate the waiting time is, and the performance standard is, we've got to do it within 18 weeks from referral to treatment. So if you're given the runaround by the NHS in the meantime, not only is that an inconvenience for you, it is hurting the NHS's performance numbers. Separately, there's a process that we always do, our predecessors did, so this is not new, of going through a process of what's known as validation and validating the waiting list, because we have on the waiting list duplicate cases, people who've been treated but not taken off, people who were referred wrongly. So that also takes place, and I think that I can't remember the precise Telegraph report, but that's certainly been in some of the newspapers.
The Telegraph said they were manually taken off lists, some of these people. Removes includes patients who gave up and went private and those who died. Is that the reality?
Well, certainly, that on the latter point, there will grimly and be people who die whilst on a waiting list.
So there's manipulation of the figures.
No, Nick, because
you can tell me, look, stare me in the face, so there's
No, because those things are captured in the data and shown, but of course, like, as far as I'm concerned, yes, there will be some people who come off a waiting list because they've been treated somewhere else, or because they were on there wrongly and those sorts of things. We want those people off the list because otherwise someone who is sick is waiting behind someone who doesn't need treatment. But the crucial thing, and the thing I really want people to be reassured by, is we are delivering record levels of activity and meeting record levels of demand. So the idea and the sort of the charge that somehow we're fiddling the figures to cut the waiting lists, that doesn't hold up to scrutiny, because we wouldn't be able to cut the waiting list doing that. Okay. And we're not doing anything different methodologically than our predecessors did. So you are comparing like for like as well.
Right.
I hope people find that reassuring. But certainly to say to people, if you are made to wait longer because the NHS has cancelled and rearranged on you, the NHS isn't fiddling the figures. That will be shown up in those longer waits.
David, thank you for the call. You reference resident doctors. Farouk is in Maidstone, and I think you are one. Farouk, you're through to the Health Secretary. Go ahead. Good morning.
Hi, Secretary of State. My question is, in the recent negotiations that you did have with the Residents Doctors Committee, the 1,000 extra training posts were held as a conditional part of the deal. As you're aware, the pressures on the NHS and consultant shortages are directly affecting waiting lists and impacting patient care with things such as corridor care. My question to you is, given now that you're willing to meet the Residents Doctors Committee again, are you prepared to still commit to increasing training number posts irrespective of ongoing strike action, or is it going to be tied down to strike action whether we increase training posts or not?
Secretary of State.
Thanks, Farouk. So, yes, you're right. The offer that was made to the BMA was, in addition to the 28.9% pay rise that's already been given, there would be a 4.9% average pay rise for resident doctors, as high as 7.1% for some of the lowest paid resident doctors. The cancellation and reimbursement of exam fees that would save thousands out of doctors' pockets. And then there would be 1,000 extra training places open now and available from this autumn.
But they've gone?
They've gone.
Well, will you reinstate them, was Farouk's question.
Not for this year, because it's too late now. And the BMA knew that. And so I'd just say a few things stepping back. From
why would you sabotage the NHS in this fashion?
We're not. So the
if we're not 1,000 doctors training, what do you describe that as?
There are not 1,000 fewer doctors as a result. They're because they'll be locally employed doctors. Yeah. Yeah, they're missing out on that progression opportunity. And that's,
how does that help the NHS Secretary?
Two things, Nick. One is, I've had a lot of pushback from senior leaders in the NHS who are saying, actually, we would be, through your training places, Secretary of State, training more resident doctors than are currently needed in the NHS. And I was willing to do that because I recognise the pressures on their bottleneck. Now, the strike that we saw last week cost the NHS £300 million. And that money has to be found from somewhere. And I don't see why other groups of staff or other patients and services should be paying the price for resident doctors' actions. And the BMA knew that.
If peace breaks out, could they be reinstated next calendar year?
Of course. I wanted to work with the BMA. The other thing I'd just say, Nick, is when we came in, we negotiated a good deal very quickly, the best in the entire public sector. I put forward emergency legislation only weeks ago that would prioritise UK graduates for those training places because the BMA asked me to, and because I thought the argument they were making was the right one, which is it's not fair on UK-trained doctors to compete on equal terms with overseas doctors. And the competition for training places was at 4-1.
Right.
Thanks to the action I took, the competition is now less than 2-1 for places. And I implemented it while the discussions and talks and negotiations were ongoing. So I thought, well, this is the right thing to do, and I think it would be a sign of goodwill to the BMA. And then they went on strike anyway. And so for your listeners who are thinking, well, is he being a bit too hardline now? Is he? Honestly, guys, I have no choice now because this disruption is hurting NHS performance. It's costing £300 million per rounds of strike that we don't have. And if there are no downsides to the BMA, they will keep on doing this and keep on coming back for more.
They have to go in August, I understand, to ballot their workforce, don't they, about further industrial action. Which way is it going to go?
Well, I hope that by the time we get there, this will be resolved. But, Nick, I've got to tell you, like the BMA officers that we deal with and that come on your show and others are good people. They come across really well. I happen to like them very much personally. And then the deal that they negotiate, as we had the other week, then goes to this bigger committee, which has dozens of people on it, who not only rejected the deal and went straight out on strike without even coming back to me to say, this isn't quite right, this is what we want. I asked to meet with them and said, OK, if you're the decision makers, I need to come and meet with the whole committee so you understand me.
Well, you used to tell me, get everyone in a room when you're in opposition.
And I got a letter back rejecting it. And you only have to look on social media at the way in which these committee members rejected that offer and the attitude they have to kind of realise what we're up against here, despite the government bending over backwards to try and get a deal.
So is it more of a political movement now than a medical movement, the BMA?
It feels like it, bluntly.
Will you end the strikes
this
year?
And we're seeing that across the board.
Will you end the strikes this year?
I honestly don't know, Nick.
Okay.
And I just say to the BMA members listening, you have got to think really carefully about the consequences of your own actions for your profession, for the NHS and for our country. Right. Because the NHS is under real pressure. We're not out of the woods yet. We're making progress. We could do that faster. And the NHS is, for this government, the most important public service. But it's not the only one. And there are other staff in the NHS, other staff in the public sector, patients, pupils, users of public services, victims of crime, who also require investment. And then you look at the wider challenges facing this country, the defence threats, the security threats, the costs of Iran.
Yes. Well, can we talk
be reasonable and realistic can we talk about a little the pressures facing the country?
Before we go to our next caller, Farouk, thank you and good luck, and thank you for the work you do as a resident doctor. I'm sure Mr. Streeter would agree.
Oh, absolutely.
There.
Yeah. I definitely value resident doctors. We should have to do a deal.
Are you familiar with exercise turnstone? Exercise turnstone?
Tell me. Is this the contingency plan
yes,
story?
Yes, so
that's
number
in the
10,
Times?
The Treasury and the Ministry of Defence secretly rehearsing scenarios looking at the potential impact on British industry and other areas in Exercise Turnstone. The Emergency Committee COBRA has also been involved. What is the impact for possible medicine supplies and indeed fuel for our ambulances if the Iran conflict continues? Has priority been given to ambulance fuel?
So a few things. We don't normally comment on leaks of this nature, Nick, but I'm going to follow the lead of the business secretary who was out this morning, Peter Kyle. So the government does, as I hope people will be reassured by, does do contingency planning and major cross-government exercises for a range of worst-case scenarios, from supply chain disruption and the consequences of the war in Iran through to the risks of, all sorts of attacks on our country and other challenges. So, as we stand here today, I am confident about the resilience of the NHS supply chain. I am confident about the way our preparedness for some of the predictable and potentially unintended consequences of the war in Iran, although I have a degree of anxiety around things like diesel costs, for example. Most of our ambulances run on diesel. I worry about rising fuel costs and what that would mean for domiciliary
care.
Diesel
supplies, Secretary of State. Has a situation been worked out, a priority situation, where ambulances can get their fuel?
Yeah, the government does do contingency planning. We do that prioritisation. Central government is absolutely aware of our needs
in
health and social care.
Ambulances will quite rightly go to the top of the line.
Yeah, so and it's really important to say two things in this context. One is we are absolutely prepared and we do that contingency planning. Secondly, the likelihood of us needing to activate these worst-case scenario plans is reassuringly low.
But we keep a close eye on this. Last month, he told me he was, quote, really worried about medical supplies. That was Sir Jim Mackey with me.
Yeah, and look, I'm in the
was
same...
Was he wrong?
No, not at all. I think these are reasonable...
In some instances, he says we've got drugs down to their days.
Reasonable. These are reasonable things to be worried
we
about.
We've got drugs that will run out in
but
days.
But as we sit here today, we're confident about our supply chains and our resilience. And the other thing I can reassure people about is where we have seen disruption for other reasons, for example, a factory going down in Germany or a cyber attack on one of our partners in the US, we have responded in a way that has got us through. So we know that our planning and works when it hits the real world.
So lastly on this, can you rule out drug rationing?
Yes, at this stage, absolutely.
And fuel rationing could be, and if so, the ambulances are catered for.
Well, we'd obviously prioritise ambulances, but just to reassure people, Nick, we're a long way from that. And for example, just to speak as a citizen rather than as a politician for a moment, you know, I'm having no hesitations about filling up my car at the pump. And similarly, if my tank's less than half full, I'm also not rushing because I think there's going to be a problem. Okay. So I think we just got to carry on with normal and be reassured when you see these sorts of, what are for us, irritating leaks in the media.
All right.
Absolutely.
You mentioned defence.
You know, we are ready.
Let's get to the next call. Hugh is in Kensington. The question of West Streeting. Hugh, go ahead. Good morning.
Yes. Good morning, Minister. Minister, I'm going to give you some evidence from yesterday. I'm a veteran. I suffer from chronic CPTSD linked to childhood trauma. In 23, I had a massive wobble. Thankfully, my partner made me seek help. I'm 57, by the way, for that type of age group. And I didn't know where to turn. I bounced from charity to charity until I found Op Courage, which gave me 6 months of treatment at St Pancras NHS. And, Minister, it was brilliant.
I've got to move you to your question, Hugh. Sorry, get you to your question, sir.
I will. We've set up a digital platform to give veterans direct access to physical, mental, preventative health. Mm. When, yesterday, I was told I had to wait 9 months to finish my treatment. Veterans die within 8 months. Mm. When will you start putting defence spending over welfare?
Now, you said at the weekend, West Streeting, you wouldn't allow money to go from the health service budget into defence, but of course, we've since then had the Lord Robertson report, which talks about well, effectively, we are underprepared and underinsured. Should more money be found somewhere for defence? Wes Streeting.
Yes, we do need to put more money into defence. We have been putting more money into defence.
More money on
government, but we will need more, Nick. That is the reality of the challenge of the world that we face. And I have to say, listening to Hugh there was an extremely uncomfortable experience for me, because I think that we owe him and other veterans a lot better. And to wait that long.
We're not defending the citizens, though. You just reminded us all you're a citizen. We're not defending our citizens here, Mr. Streeting. That was quite plain from Lord Robertson's report.
Well, I think we've got to distinguish between two things: current capability and potential threats and future threats. We shouldn't underestimate the capability that we have as a country today. And despite the challenges of a defence budget that has been run down over many years, and capability, which has been run down to an irresponsible extent, level, in my view, we do also have unique capabilities that even a superpower like the United States looks to us to, particularly on the intelligence side of Britain's capability.
We haven't got a ship to control the English Channel.
But we've got a lot more to do, Nick. We've never shied away from that as a government. We know we've got a lot more to do.
Spending on welfare move towards defence, well, as Lord Robertson seemed to suggest?
We definitely want to reduce the welfare budget.
So should it go to defence, Mr. Streeting?
Well, I think it was for the Chancellor to set out her budget, so I want to make sure I stay in my lane, but just to say that when the Chancellor is making decisions, I have no doubt, both from the judgments she's made and also from the evidence that we're confronted with, that defence will be much higher on her list of priorities than many of her predecessors. She's shown
and
that already through her choices.
And it could come from the burgeoning welfare budget, lastly.
Well, it's got to come from somewhere.
Would you support it coming from the burgeoning welfare budget?
Well, we want to reduce the welfare budget. The one thing I would just push gently back on Hugh on, though, because this has been an issue in recent weeks, and it's a line of attack we're getting particularly from the Conservatives. I don't see actually a conflict between the defence of our country and lifting kids out of poverty. And I just say to people listening, as one of those kids who grew up in poverty on a council estate in East London, your wise investment as British taxpayers meant I ended up getting a good education, mm-hmm. living in a council house, the benefit system put food in the fridge and money in the electric meter, and it meant I left school with good qualifications and have had a career where I'm not just paying back my debt to the taxpayer, but I'm paying forward to the next generation. The cost of not doing that would be much higher, and I would much rather have gone to Cambridge University as I did and be giving back as a higher rate taxpayer as I am today than ending up in prison like my grandparents did. And that I think gets lost in this debate about welfare.
You're talking about the safety and the health of children. I've got a question from Ellen Room. Ellen is an online safety campaigner whose 14-year-old son took his life in 2022. She told me this and asked you this.
Mm. Please, please, please do actually do something. This whole thing of just delaying it is not good enough. And maybe Wes Streeting would like a meeting with us, because I'm sure we've all got a point of view which we'd love to get across to somebody if somebody would give us the time to listen to our point of view. But this consultation with children who's 10 years old in the consultation can apply to it. They'll take their point of view, but they actually won't meet with us and actually hear our point of view when we have lost children.
And that comes, of course, as it was voted down yesterday. I note you chose to abstain, and that campaigner says that Sir Keir Starmer has declined to meet with her or any of the other 15 campaigners on online safety. Will you meet with them, and why did you not vote?
I was down in Sussex yesterday announcing the review into their maternity services. So, yeah, it wasn't a couldn't-be-asked situation.
How would you have voted?
I would have voted with the government because I'm a government minister. But just to say on this, because this is a crucial issue.
What these campaigns are. I know Sir Keir's got a summit today. That 15 people, he's declined to meet. Will you meet with these people?
Yes, if you put me in touch with Ellen, and I'm very happy to do that. And I'm so sorry for what she and others have been through. I just want to reassure people, though. The reason why the votes went the way they did in the Commons yesterday is because right now the government has a rapid, and I emphasise rapid, consultation on the steps we're going to take to keep people safe online. And there is a bit of nuance about this that we've got to get right. And I think it's a good thing to listen to campaigners, parents, most importantly, young people themselves.
In what way is it rapid, Mr. Streeting?
Well, it's taking weeks rather than years, which in Whitehall terms is positively light speed. But I mean, I've been pushing hard as the Health Secretary on this because I worry about this from a children's safety, health and well-being
perspective. As each month goes by, a child can take their life or seriously harm themselves with knives and others. You know that. We've got to cut through this delay, Mr. Streeting.
We do, and that's why I'm glad that we are moving in the right direction. And Liz Kendall has been leading the charge on this,
right,
with the support of the Education Secretary and me as the Health Secretary. I feel really strongly about this too.
Right. You referenced the education.
I've done a lot on junk food, but we need to do a lot to tackle junk information and online harms and abuse.
You mentioned the Education Secretary. This question from Claire in Lewisham, I think, pertains to her and possibly another delay. Claire, your question briefly, if you can. Thank you.
Hi, yes. Hello, Mr. Speaking. I'd like to ask if you're worried about the Women and Equalities Minister, Bridget Phillipson, delaying publishing the new EHRC guidance on the Equality Act, which is meant to be advising duty bearers to act in line with the Supreme Court, to say that sex means biological sex in the Equality Act, which obviously protects single-sex spaces in the NHS and hospitals, especially where it's so important.
Claire, this question... Thank you, Claire. Mr. Streeting, this comes as the Daily Mail's analysis found 97% of 198 NHS trusts in England with inpatient facilities have policies allowing trans-identifying biological males to use women-only spaces, such as wards and changing rooms and toilets. That's in your NHS. Why the delay?
A reassurance and an explanation. So the reassurance is it is ready. It would have been published right now, but it applies across Great Britain, and with elections in Scotland and Wales, we're not allowed to make government announcements like that.
You could
during
have done
election
it prior.
Period.
You've had, not you, yeah, but Bridget that, Phillipson has had it since September.
And that brings me to the explanation for the delay. On one level, this is really simple. Sex matters. Biology is immutable. And we've got to make sure that when we protect single-sex spaces, especially women's spaces, on the basis of sex. And I think that is clear in law and in the Supreme Court ruling. We've also got to make sure that we are protecting the rights, the dignity and the safety of trans people. And so in a hospital setting, for example, let me explain how this can sometimes be a bit more nuanced than how this plays out. Because, for example, I believe very strongly that women's wards should be for biological women. What do we do about that biological female who is a trans man, looks, sounds, presents, lives his life as a man, is biologically female? We wouldn't put him on a women's ward. That would be degrading for him and humiliating and cruel. It would also be distressing for the women. So we need to make sure that we've got trans-inclusive spaces too.
And we will have trans-inclusive spaces in all our hospitals.
Well, we've got to make sure. I want, you know, my worry about...
When will
my,
that be?
My fear about... Well, it takes time because at the moment, Nick, as I said...
Well, we haven't even got rid of fax machines, so when the hell are we going to have these
good
rooms?
I've got good news on fax machines. One trust, Leeds, is the only trust using fax machines, I gather. And secondly, on the other point, we have got a large number of single-sex breaches every single day, which is nothing to do with trans people. It's just the NHS pressures means that men and women are in spaces together that I wish they weren't.
The local elections will be over in under a month. Will this guidance be published by your colleagues?
Bridget Phillipson is ready to go and chomping at the bit.
What, May? Late May?
May, yes.
It will come in May?
Yes.
Finally, one of your colleagues, Samantha Niblett, launched a Summer of Sex campaign to overhaul sex education.
It's been really nice talking to you, Nick.
Your colleague,
I can see
Lucy,
James O'Brien's just arrived.
Your
it's
colleague,
time for
Lucy
me to leave.
Powell, says, told LBC yesterday, I don't personally own any sex toys, but each to their own. I'm not really sure it's the right place for it.
She did. I have nothing further to add to what Lucy Powell said. And
no,
I
not
just,
about Lucy
I
Powell,
just
about
want,
you, Mr. Streeting.
I would like the ground to open up and please just shoot me now.
Suffice
it to say, Samantha Niblett is running a campaign designed to get people talking about sex and relationships
Nothing
education.
Else to share, Mr. Streeting?
And not with you, that's for sure.
I'm probably quite relieved at that. Congratulations on those figures. You're almost
Niblett,
there.
Yeah, and thank you very much. And Samantha Niblett is getting us talking about sex education.
Final tribute to the NHS staff who've got you to those figures that you told us about today.
100%,
Mr. Streeting.
Nick, lots done, lots more to do. The NHS is on the road to recovery. We've got our foot down on the accelerator. And, you know, I'm not going to stop until we get there. But thanks to all of the staff who've worked really hard to get these results out today.
Appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thanks,
well
Nick.
Done to you and all your colleagues. I'm done. James O'Brien, as Mr. Streeting rightly references, the other side of the news. I'm back with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock. And do you know, I was listening to Wes Streeting talking to Nick, and I was wondering what I would ask if I were to ring into the programme. And there's a story in the news today that speaks to something I... only really discovered as a consequence of doing this weird job for a living. And it is a story about the length of life that you can expect, not just in years, but in terms of quality of life as well. The number of good years or healthy years you will live if you are born into a wealthy area of this country compared to how long you will live a good life if you're born into one of the poorest areas. And the figure, frankly, is unbelievable.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, senior executives from social media companies are being summoned to Downing Street for online safety talks today. Bosses from the likes of YouTube, TikTok and Snapchat will be challenged on the action to restrict social media access for under-16s. Ahead of the meeting, Keir Starmer has told LBC there will be stark consequences if firms don't step up efforts. Campaigner Ellen Room has told LBC that there's a danger the issue could turn into talks and no action.
And how many times do you have to keep talking about the subject? I mean, it goes on and on and on about a consultation and all the things that they keep saying, well, we need to look at doing more, actually do something. I just get so frustrated with this continuous talk of consultations and things, you know, like delaying the hours that a child can be on the site. They can still see harm within that time. We need to step up and actually take some leadership and protect the children that are on the platforms.
The Prime Minister has written exclusively for LBC ahead of that summit. You can read more on the LBC app. It's understood the UK could see shortages of chicken and pork if the war in Iran continues into the summer. Government officials have reportedly been drawing up contingency plans for a reasonable worst-case scenario. Last month, the head of the NHS in England warned that if medicine supplies could be disrupted if the conflict continues past July. Speaking to Nick Ferrari on LBC's Call the Cabinet this morning, the Health Secretary Wes Streeting ruled out the potential of drug rationing.
As we sit here today, we're confident about our supply chains and our resilience. Okay. We know that our planning and works when it hits the real world.
So lastly on this, can you rule out drug rationing?
Yes, at this stage, absolutely.
And fuel rationing could be, and if so, were the ambulances are catered?
Well, we'd obviously prioritise ambulances, right. But just to reassure people, Nick, we are a long way from that.
Health Secretary also denied claims that he's sabotaging the NHS by removing extra training places for resident doctors in England. Members of the British Medical Association recently finished 6 days of walkouts over their long-running row over jobs and pay. Before the walkout, the government retracted its offer for extra places because no agreement was reached. Wes Streeting told LBC this morning that he is prepared to reinstate that offer if officials return to mediation talks. Submerged, an average of 3 prisoners a week were freed by mistake in England and Wales over the past year. Ministry of Justice data released today suggests 179 inmates were released in error between April 2025 and March 2026. And the UK economy grew by 0.5% in February, according to official data. A previous estimate of no growth in January has been revised up to 0.1%. The data doesn't show the impact of the Iran war, which started on the last day of February. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 13 at 10,573. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.14. LBC weather, a mix of sunny spells and showers for large parts of the UK through Thursday. Some heavy downpours in the north, a high of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
It's the cinematic event of the year. Critics are saying a stunning, breathtaking triumph of savings. It's 2-for-1 cinema tickets from Compare the Market in cinemas all year.
That sounds like a great movie.
Sergey, it's no movie. It's 2-for-1 offer on cinema tickets.
Oh, yeah. I knew that.
Get 2-for-1 cinema tickets every Tuesday or Wednesday with the Compare the Market app. The simplest way to save.
When you take out a qualifying product to Compare the Market. One membership per year participating cinemas. 2 standard tickets only. Cheap as free. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Four minutes after 10 is the time. A very good morning indeed to you. I never notice while it's happening. I only notice when it's over. But we seem to have moved out of that period where it felt as though it would be inappropriate to talk about anything other than the war in Iran. A similar thing happened with Ukraine, albeit that is an entirely different war, an entirely different type of war. But it's just worth noting, isn't it? I mean, there haven't been any major developments.
obviously the fact that one side, both sides are far from trustworthy, but one side is prone to contradict itself within minutes of opening its mouth, and incredibly, that's the side that we still consider to be our allies. But in terms of that sense I had, and I shared it with you a few times, I'd say to Eleanor some mornings at 11 o'clock or 12 o'clock, I said, it's going to sound a bit odd if we start talking about shoplifting, isn't it? Having just sort of spent an hour examining the likelihood of World War III starting soon, or questions about whether the United States of America is currently undergoing its own Suez, its own sort of abandonment of the top seat at top table when it comes to international relations, questions about whether or not Donald Trump has finally entirely lost touch with sanity, talking about whether or not the most powerful man on the planet is entirely unfit for purpose. And now we're going to talk, I mean, we never actually talk about parking tickets on this program because it is always an unrelentingly dull conversation, ditto speeding tickets. But moving on to, shall we say, more quotidian, is that the right way to pronounce the word? More ordinary territory, more normal, more common or garden territory felt odd. And suddenly it doesn't feel odd today. I don't know why. And I just thought I'd mention it to you, because we will probably return. Here's an example. Lebanon has revealed that it is unaware of Israel talks, which kind of sums up what I was just trying to say to you about not being able to get a clear bead on anything from anyone at the moment. So talks ongoing with Israel, according to President Trump, and Lebanon have said that they're unaware of any talks that they are scheduled to attend. And there it is. I mean, that's possibly why we're not talking about it, he says, as he starts talking about it and feels that weird awakening of interest, because once again, we're looking at a scenario that just two short years ago would have been entirely unthinkable. The White House announces that Israel and Lebanon are having talks today, and Lebanon says that's news to us. It's 7 minutes after 10, and the world is still bonkers. Which is why perhaps it's nice to return attention to more manageable matters, albeit, in this case, genuinely heartbreaking. Right, one of my favourite things to do with you, matron, is to say a word and just wonder what it does in your brain. When you hear a word, what does it conjure up? Either, you know, a mental image, possibly sometimes even a physical response, but most often a mental image, an idea, a reaction. It'll be partly an intellectual reaction, as in your brain will respond to whatever that word is, and it might be partly an emotional reaction, as in the word or the phrase will trigger feelings inside you. I'm going to say a word, and I just want you to take a moment, if you can, to sort of run it around your mouth, you know, if it were wine. I interviewed the wonderful, wonderful man, Mark Constantine, who owns Lush, runs Lush, the, you know, the high street, what would you call it, really? It's sort of toilet trees and so much more, really. And he has synesthesia. And so does Sheila Fogarty, as she's told you in the past. And this means that you see one sense responds to something that, for people who haven't got synesthesia, an entirely different sense would respond. So with him, it's often smell. It's why he's such a gifted perfumier. But I'd ask him about a period, and I realised this halfway through the interview, that he would express himself through the medium of smell. So he'd be talking about a period in his life, and I halfway through the interview, I found myself saying, well, what does it smell like? Because I'm quite, I hope you'd agree, I'm quite good with words. I can express